This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Welcome all to the March 26th meeting of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. We're all in the room. We're waiting for one member, Mr. Planet, to arrive. And my assumption is he's just a little bit delayed by either traffic or weather. But in an attempt to keep us well on track to make our 3 o'clock deadline and give us plenty of time to discuss matters today, I'd like to get started. We are recording. I remind you, well, I'll turn to Lucy now for those opening administrative comments and housekeeping items.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Ms. Fleming?
Yes.
Judge Coates?
Here.
Judge Heinrich?
Here.
Judge Maragonda?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Ms. Brenner?
Here.
Mr. Lewis?
Here.
Mr. Planet? Mr. Roddy?
Here.
Ms. Huguenot-Bianco.
Not me?
I forgot to rehearse. Mr. Wordlaw? Franco Theodorovich?
Here.
So just a reminder, the meeting is open and is being recorded. If members can identify themselves prior to speaking for the benefit of those on the phone. And I don't believe there are any members on the phone. So we're good to go.
Excellent. Well, to start off the meeting on both a happy and a sour note, I want to acknowledge Jeff Lewis from King's. Jeff is here today for his final hurrah as an FMS member. And within how long, Jeff, from retirement?
About 72 hours.
Okay. That would be this Thursday. And you're looking younger every day. I was commenting before we started, and I only take a moment to again acknowledge this, but I've been so impressed with the work of every single member of this committee, and Jeff has been an integral part of that work as well. There's been some challenging tasks, and those tasks have been made achievable thanks to each of you and Jeff. So I want to thank Jeff, wish him best of luck in his retirement. I know everybody's saying that to you, but it's a sincere wish from every member of this committee, subcommittee. So we appreciate you being in the room again today. 3 days from retirement, you made it to the meeting, so that speaks well of you. Thank you so much. A few more administrative matters. The first is to move to approve the minutes of the November 11th meeting, page 3 of your materials. Hopefully you've had a few moments to review those minutes that were distributed timely last week. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second? All right. Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the November 11th meeting. In the interest of moving this along, any opposition to the motion to approve? I'll deem it unanimous. The minutes are approved from the November 11th meeting. And we're now moving on to public comment. It's my understanding there was no written public comment and no request for public comment?
Correct.
Okay. We have a few guests in the room, obviously. They're always more than welcome, but I just want to acknowledge there's no request for public comment today. So no written public comment being received and no request for public comment today. That concludes the public comment portion of the meeting. So moving right along to item one, which is the discussion for this meeting concerning the allocation of the $47.8 million in the governor's proposed budget. And rather than me try to summarize that and then turn to Leah and Kristen to do that, I'm going to turn to them right away. We're going to get a little bit of background from Leah to summarize it, and then we're going to do our best to stick with numbers here rather than labels on those numbers, so we all understand the options with that. Leah?
Thank you, Judge. It feels like, at least to me, like a long time has passed since this group has met, and so I thought it might be useful to just have a few of the issues that have come up since the last time that FMS met. Many of you will remember that on January 12th, the council approved new policy directions for WAPA. Shortly after that, the governor released his proposed budget for the coming year. And just right soon after that, toward the end of January, we released a proposal that would show the allocation, a hypothetical allocation of $47.8 million, of course, which were then based on what was current at the time, the RAS FTE need estimates for 18-19. In the beginning of February, the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee got together and approved a change in the RAS model regarding infractions workload. And that change will end up having a slight will result in a slight change to the RAS FTE needs for a few mid-sized courts. The council will receive that recommendation in May. And so, again, many of the numbers that we will be talking about today are going to be hypothetical for that very reason, that we will have a slightly different FTE need to work with when it comes to allocations for 18-19. The recommendation that the council approve regarding WAFA really falls into three main areas. The committee established a methodology, or reaffirmed really the workload-based methodology for determining trial court needs and building those allocations. And the committee established funding methodology for two different scenarios, years when there is no new money and years when there is new money. The governor's budget, the $47.8 million, falls into a slightly different category. It is not, it is what we would call non-discretionary funding, and therefore does not really fall into what the definition of new money for the methodology approved by WAFA. And in that $47.8 million, there were two numbers indicated. So again, $47.8 million. And then the governor specifically called out that that money was intended to fund courts that were below 76.9% of their overall need, according to WAFA. So we do need to have the committee weigh in on allocations of 47.8. Again, we will not have the numbers that we'll be showing today will not be finalized, but there is a policy decision that needs to be made. I also want to point out that this morning we sent out a revised page 6 to the packet. There was a column of numbers in the middle under the option titled Option 1, Final Total 18-19 WAFM Related Allocation. We saw that, that when we sent the packet out last week, that column of numbers had it was carried out to a decimal point, and we also saw that in the rounding of the numbers that some of the values were slightly off. The total dollar amount of how much it was off was less than $20. But for clarity and for presentation purposes, it made sense to resend the packet with that cleaned up version of numbers. So substantively, the numbers haven't changed, but I think it will make for an easier presentation when we talk about the proposal for the 47.8. For that discussion, I'm going to turn it over to Kristen.
And for everybody in the room, that's the new page 6 is on the table if you don't have it, but I think everybody has it.
All right. Okay, thank you. So as we have stated, the 2018-19 budget includes $47.8 million to bring trial courts up to the statewide average of 76.9% of need. And as you stated, due to updates to the input to the model, $7.8 million referenced in the budget language is no longer enough to course up to the new statewide average, which is 78.6%. So to allocate that $47.8 million, we've developed two options to allocate those dollars. So again, this is not part of the WAFM policy. This is separate non-discretionary funds to allocate. The first option is something that we sent to the courts in February. The second option is something that we looked at after those materials were originally sent out. And just as a quick summary, both options employ the, kind of the same first step, and that is to bring courts to 76.9% of need. So, again, we can't bring courts up to the new statewide average, which is 78.6, but we can bring them to 76.9% of need, which is the average referenced in that budget language. So after we bring those courts to 76.9% of need, not all of the $47.8 million is allocated. So we have approximately $12 million remaining to be allocated. And that's where the two options come into play. So the first option, and again, this was what we sent to the courts in February, this targets allocating dollars to courts that are furthest away from the average. Option two allocates dollars to all courts that are below that statewide average of 78.6. So we're kind of using that 78.6 as kind of the where our starting point is, and so the first option, again, brings all those courts that are furthest away from the average closer. The second option tries to capture all those courts that are below that average. And if you want to reference...
Can I just interrupt, make sure everybody understands, and I understand it as well. Both options, the first step in either option is to bring them up to 76.9.
Yeah.
So that's accomplished. And then the decision is, okay, what do you do with the rest?
What do we do with that $12 million?
Any questions about that? That's the fundamental. I just want to make sure that's the first step. Both options treat it the same way. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Perfect. All right. So if you refer to it, it might be helpful to see the visual. So this is a sheet that was up there. It's titled 47.8 million courts sorted by percent need, column E. So all the courts that are above, everyone above that first dark line is allocated a portion of that 47.8 million and brought up to 76.9%. You don't see that number here because it's a part of a multi-step process. The courts that are in that shaded area highlight those two options. So again, the green shaded area is that option one, where you can see the courts brought up closer to that average. And then option two is the pink shaded area over in starting in column I, where we allocate dollars to all courts below the statewide average. And then it's for all options, again, the courts below that dark line are above the statewide average, and they would not be allocated any portion of that 47.8 million. So it's really those middle sections where the options differ.
So everybody above the dark line and below the dark line is treated the same in either option.
Yes.
So this narrows then into those five courts that are set out in the two options and the impact that either option one or option two would have just on those five courts, which obviously involves courts of various sizes.
Correct. Two things, two questions. The first one, the 76.9, that number was actually in the budget?
Yes. So that was the original average, and so the number was actually referenced.
And the answer, okay, great. And then the second, it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the courts above the dark line really aren't treated the same under the two proposals in that they end up with different numbers under the proposals.
Yes, the dollars will, as the dollars change, it will shift the amount that's provided. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But to met the policy.
Judge Conklin, I want to just add one thing to, because we have new need numbers coming out as a result of these fractions change, we have currently five courts in that band. I want to be clear that we will not have these same five courts in this band once the new numbers come in. So our hope is that we get a decision from the committee on the policy call to be made. But I need everybody to just not look at the names here and just think of it conceptually. Is the intent of the new funding to bring all option one, to bring all the courts that are farthest away from the statewide average as far up as we can, or is the intent of the language to provide some portion of funding to all courts that are below the statewide average?
Right. So that's an excellent point. I think Judge Cope clarified it, and Leah as well. Let's stay away from numbers, and let's talk about the policies that we've previously discussed, both in this subcommittee and that were approved by WAFL. And I'm open to, obviously, discussion. I'll just throw it out there, not as chair or co-chair, but just as an observation, it appears that option one appears to be truer to that original policy decision made by this subcommittee and by TICBAC.
That's recommendation to
okay.
Option one.
Yes.
So when the time is right, I have a third option that I would like to outline.
Okay, the time's, I mean.
Well, I don't know if you want to ask questions about the first two.
So I just want to say I think that what we intended was is when there's new money, everybody got to get a part of it so that they would not just feel like so not looking at them, because when I say that, it actually negatively impacts my court, but I think that it was really meant to benefit as many courts as possible. So, and that's what I would want to try to do.
But Judge, I would agree with you, except that this money came with those strings, which make it different than the
the definition of new money that we put forth.
Right, and I guess my only comment was is that to the extent that it has strings to it, to benefit as many courts as possible as a theory.
Tanya?
Well, I think that speaking to that point, our discussion was is to take the first whatever it was, apply it to those, and then the next group of money to apply it across the board.
We agreed to cluster one. Then we then agreed to look at cluster two, but there was no motion or whatever to do. The goal would be that we would, you know, try to look at it, but what we agreed to was cluster one and then to look at cluster two.
And that's the understanding, that if there was a lump of money, the
sure.
first 50%
would go below. No, it would go below the line.
But they're looking at this separately.
Right.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
So if we were to break this down and look, then and assume that the $75 million came in, then our discretionary, what
that's
we
exactly.
came up with, would be at the first $37.5 million would be under that. But this is all encumbered, and so we have to find a way to use this. Well, I think we got very lucky with this because this is much more than anybody expected when we came up with our proposals in the end of October, that we would have this lump of money coming in.
Yeah, he sort of threw us a curveball, but it was a good curveball.
Well, I mean,
so.
think about what we educated them upon was the fact that there was this inequity of funding and this distribution. And so there are many ways, as they always talk about, equalizing funding. Well, the administration chose to identify an amount of money that would equalize. So in a way, they've taken the first step of identifying a pot of money, this 47.8, that's purely for equalization. And while it's defined as not being discretionary, I don't want folks to misunderstand that word, because that's an important word outside here, is that it's discretion as far as how the council is allocating it, but it would still go to those courts at their full discretion. So let's make that distinction, that it is the council's ability and allocation, not once the funding is received by a court, that it is somehow limited in their choice and how to use it for their priorities.
For individual courts.
Yes.
Exactly, as it always has been, right?
But yeah.
Yep.
But the words non-discretionary in this environment have people thinking that somehow there's going to be something dictated to the court that receives it. And it's not that. It is at the level of the council that we're talking about, given the structure of the proposed budget.
Exactly. Judge Cope?
Yeah, and not to waste time with an editorial comment, but that's right. And this is what, for the 5 years I've been on this committee, we've all been saying, boy, if somebody would just give us the money to equalize things.
That's exactly.
And so you're right. It's not luck. It was a lot of years of hard work by the council staff, but
And I don't mean to parrot the comment that Judge Maraganda made, but this is different than the $75 million. This is not money that we can – this is money that's been – it's non-discretionary as far as where it can be allocated. It is discretionary as far as the courts that get it, how they spend it. Right. So, Sherry?
Well, I'm not sure my idea. If the belief is that it has to be tied to those under the line, then I'm not sure my idea would fly. So when I was the CEO, and I'm going to give a story that many of you have heard before, but when I was the CEO in Riverside and Stephen Nash was the CEO in San Bernardino, he raised the Emily offset with me as an equity issue. And I have now spent hours and hours and hours of research both on the working group minutes, the judicial council minutes, and all of the information that was given to the council. And I think the council made a bad decision based on a lack of information. The MOE offset is a trial court trust fund debt. And it is because at the time there was a legal opinion that was produced that said that civil assessments cannot go to the county. The counties that lost the revenue then came and said, we want an offset. And the council, because of, I think that is, that those counties, those courts that were making the money have to pay back the counties instead of the trial court trust fund. In fact, the legislature was clear and said, we're not going to fill the hole like we have the other five times. We're going to give the branch $300 to allow you to pay yourself back. So what dawned on me, and so it is completely an equity issue, and what dawned on me is when I looked at the next item of the 36 courts that are under the average, 26 are paying an MOE offset. So the other 11 are either at or above the average line. 26 courts. So let me give you an example. Let's use Ventura. So Ventura has $1.8 million of an MOE offset, or 5.78% of their WACM allocation. They are the highest number. So they have a $1.8 million offset, yet in their $47 million, they're getting either 1.5 or 1.4. It's not their debt. They're paying a trial court trust fund debt off. And in fact, when we are short, the trial court trust fund makes up the difference. And so it seems crazy to not look at the pieces together. We look at things in such silos that we don't put the pieces together. And so I was going to propose that as another equity issue, the 11.9 be used to pay down the MOE offset, which benefits 26 courts under the line at a much greater percentage than the difference between option one and option two. And it benefits everybody who's, because you could use the same percentage that they have to pay against the remaining $36,402,729. So I think we need to start addressing that trial court trust fund hole, and it benefits all 36 courts, but 26 of the 36 are under the average.
So is it your perspective as well, though, given the label designation of the 47.8, that we can't, that's probably a work plan discussion item or other items, but I don't, do you think it fits in the pot of the 47.8?
I don't know. I will rely on staff to tell me no, because that's what they're going to
The language is in the PowerPoint.
And why don't you read it?
So the budget includes $47.8 million to be allocated to the trial courts that are below 76.9% of their overall needs according to WACM. This augmentation is intended to equalize funding among courts by bringing all trial courts up to the statewide average funding level according to updated caseloads.
So that, you know, it is pretty clear. And if that's the case, I am continuously disappointed that we don't address this as an inequity. Because, like I said, even if you use San Bernardino or Ventura and you look at the amount of their MOE offset that through a bad decision, they are actually, San Bernardino's paying back more than they're getting. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so the day's not over. I'm not saying that's a valid, I think that's something we need to discuss, but I'm trying to keep the parameters of this item one discussion within what appears to be, and I don't disagree with your...
I got it. I see the language, and so regardless of which option you take, I feel uncomfortable voting for it, to be quite honest, because it does show LA as a big winner under one option, and I think that, you know, it needs to be at a policy level, so I'll probably abstain from the vote.
Keep in mind it's a policy level, but that's your decision. But I appreciate your sentiment. Go ahead, Tanya.
I appreciate what Sherry's saying for the 26. I don't think it belongs in the first category. I think it belongs in the next 75 million.
It just seems like there was money that would be nice to pay it down. It wouldn't impact anybody else because they're all brought up,
clearly.
And it's going to benefit 36 courts.
And I would be one of them. But I think as the way it's written and in the spirit of things, I think that it is probably in our best interest to go with what needs to happen there in the total distribution, and then when we hit that $75 million, is carve out that $11.9 million out of that.
Well, you don't have to carve out 11.9. You can get a much different number if you want to.
But I mean, to those 26 courts, deal with those. Whatever.
No, I don't think it should just. It doesn't have to be 11.9. It could be any number we make up at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a very important point, I think, when we get to the next part of the discussion, which will probably take us to at least three, if not past, But item one, I want to make sure everybody has what they consider to be an appropriate understanding of it, and then any other comments before staff, and I staff is here, they can speak, has recommended option one for the purposes stated that it appears to be within the strictly defined language. But I want to make sure we all have a chance to. And again, recognizing it's policy at this point, not numbers. So we got to be careful because the numbers, as Leah said, they're ever moving. So was there another thought from staff?
Well, there's just wondering whether anything we could do later could impact this decision, but I don't think so. Okay.
Well, and we're not, I mean, we can always come back if we feel, if as the discussion develops later on, and it's that was an unforeseen, something came up, so we didn't think about this. I mean, we can move and approve, and we can always go back. We're not, well, some think we are, but we can always go back to a decision before the end of the day or before it's finally approved elsewhere.
Just for the sake of moving things through, I would move to approve option one.
Okay. Is there a second?
A second.
All right. Moved and seconded option one, as in the materials, for the 47.8. And Mr. Planet has joined us for the 47.8 million. So that now opens it up to a discussion item before vote on the motion to approve option one. Thoughts? Mr. Roddy?
Reading the language. And I think the obvious intent of the administration's proposal was to bring all the courts up to the statewide average. I don't know if they particularly accounted for the fact that doing so would change the average, but I still think that the spirit here is to bring all courts up to the statewide average or as near as possible. And that's why I think at that point, option one for me gets everybody up to the highest possible total we can get them to near the state average. And I'm trying to stay with the spirit because what I don't want to lose is support from DOF that somehow we've jimmied this $47 million in some other fashion.
Yeah. Now, Mike, if I may just tell you to sort of allay the fears, we've discussed this mathematical issue with them and the understanding and the simplicity of their issue is the amount of funding that was identified when the budget was developed was what the math was then. And right. Now this is how much you have to further address the issue of equity, which I think recommendation does, one, and it would not be seen as inconsistent with that.
To bring all courts up to the statewide average, or in my case, right, as near as possible, that's why I'm concerned about that thing. Because, you know, maybe next year they give us $20 million to head in the same direction or something. I think it's a good faith issue for me.
I tend to agree. I think this, from a simplistic viewpoint, and none of us in this room are simplistic, and I don't mean to imply others are simplistic, but I think the level of working knowledge in this room does differ from a working knowledge of others, and I think Mike's point is an excellent one, that we are staying truest to the perception that's what this money was intended for through option one. The true language and spirit of option one, I think, meets the governor's language. Any other discussion or concerns?
Good morning, Judge Conklin. This is John Wardlaw. I'm sorry for joining late. One other piece of the puzzle that needs to be put on the table is we also we briefed finance, just as Latko has indicated. We also owe a similar conversation to the legislature so that they're making an informed decision as to how much money to appropriate consistent with the statewide average. We do owe them that conversation. I expect in the pre-hearing coming up, that dialogue will occur. I'm hopeful that the $47.8 million will remain intact, but Clean Living, there is another conversation that needs to happen with the body that's responsible for appropriating funds.
Good point. Sherry?
And I agree with what Mike said. So with that, I will, I support the motion as well.
Okay. So I just don't want to, Mr. Planet, anything you want to add to what you just walked into?
No.
Okay. Great. Then I don't want to at any point try to prevent anybody from speaking, but my observation in the room is I see no heads asking to speak or hands raised. So with that, I will call for a vote. And I'm going to do the same way I always do, and I don't mean to bring anybody out, but is there any opposition to the motion and second that option one be approved? I've waited. There's no opposition, so option one is deemed unanimously approved as recommended by this committee to move forward. Okay. And it's only 10:30. Okay.
So let me just, I just want to say I was, that's the result. I was willing to abstain because of the impact on Humboldt County, but since it was talked about at a policy level and the other final discussions, I'm comfortable with being part of the unanimous.
And so let me be careful. You're right, and I should have phrased it that way. Is there any, and I should have, any abstentions? Sherry initially said she was going to abstain but then didn't. As I understand it, Judge Heinrichs, you're the same. You were going to, but now you're not abstaining?
Right, because I think we talked about it at a policy level, and I'm fine with the result at a policy level,
yes.
And it may impact courts differently when the final numbers are out, so that's why I'm perfectly fine with the discussion.
Thank you for that clarification. Therefore, deemed approved unanimously, no abstentions. And everybody's in the room now. Okay. All right. That now gets us to item two, the work plan. So the work plan is laid out in your materials. It starts out, item two starts out at page 7, attachment A. And this is the work we have to do, 1819 and 1920. They are numbered in 1819, 2 through 8, but that's not, for purpose of this discussion, that doesn't necessarily set out a priority in any way, but I think we do need today to decide what if, well, those are obviously all on the table. Do we want to bump some of those to a later time and concentrate on a few others and change the order?
Who is working on the new worksheets? I think that is really going to be an important. I think there should be an executive summary for those people that don't want
to
see
the
details. Okay,
yeah.
Great. And then you can drill down if you want to.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Do you have a small group of CEOs that you're working with that can help with the display?
We don't, but we have.
I don't know. It just seems like Rebecca
that.
Sure. What's that?
Please.
Yeah.
You might want to reach down into some of our.
I'm thinking Brian and CFO. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
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 That's an excellent idea.
You name it with this stuff.
So
I guess we get the discussion started.
Yeah, so going then into the 18-19 list, we want to make sure that, one, we're prioritizing the conversation, two, if we can deal with low-hanging fruit and address the issues that we feel are the most pressing. So in terms of low-hanging fruit, I don't know, Leah, if there are items that you felt were easily discarded off the list.
Well, one thing we wanted to talk about today was the Extraordinary Homicide Fund.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we may be able to reach some sort of resolution on that issue today.
So we might be able to get that one off the list. So we can leave that one. In terms of priorities, just my own interpretation from where we left things in the past, I felt like Cluster 2, you know, we owe it to that group of courts to kind of try and bring some resolution to that conversation. As well as the civil assessments issue, there's been a number of references, and so that appears to be one. And then civil assessments just seems to kind of point to the other funds and workloads. But I'm not suggesting a priority. I'm just saying those are the ones that from my notes bubbled up. But if there are a recommended redistribution of the priorities, jump in.
I'm going to join in the sense of I think I would suggest those are the three we focus on today.
Which one?
Item 3, okay. Item 5, item 8.
And 8.
And I think what Zlatko and Lucy and others have helped us understand, too, is budget advocacy is an important, I think it's something we need to keep in mind as we move forward. And that advocacy, I think, and this is just me speaking, but I think that transparency that implies we wouldn't be. But transparency and getting all the numbers out on the table that come in and go out is fully expected of us, and I think something that we should not be shy in detailing as best we can. Items 3, 5, and 8 do that. I agree with Rebecca. I think 8 is the first one because when we talked last year, that's for a lot of courts we said we're not going to ignore that, so we can't.
And then, so Leah, you want to address number six. And I also wanted to ask a question. Don't forget your question. Self-help funding, are we going to try and talk around that, or is that, given that that's in the budget, we want to talk a little bit about that today and see if it's going to be something that goes forward right away or be put off?
Yeah, we do have a memo in the packet about that.
Okay.
And I think we could discuss it and go through it relatively easily.
Okay. And
that was actually my question was, with the $19.1 million in self-help funding, it would be a good time to look at how it's currently allocated and whether there should be a different formula. And, you know, because like so many things, it's probably historical-based and hasn't been reviewed. So whether it's IMF or Child Court Trust Fund, I think that both of those might need to be wrapped up to see, you know, not only how we allocate the new $19.1 million, but we should consider all three and not do it in another yet another silo.
Right. Right.
It might help if maybe we just went through the packet.
Okay.
As we go through it, we can say, okay, 2A, let's look at that and see if we want to address it today or kick it to next year or
five, and
then we'll end up with a work plan prioritization at the end of it, hopefully.
Well, I think you're going to have to do 4
this year
for allocation next year, so I would circle 3, 4, 5, and 8. I mean, you know, we've got time.
Mm-hmm.
It's only April.
Right.
So that's a good point. So let's keep in mind what our goal is by the end of the day, and that is not to solve all of these problems, but to make sure we work on all of these problems and in what order we work on them. So at the end of the day, we need to have a decision made as to what do we do with this list and what's going to keep us busy for the next year.
Yep.
Okay.
So then let's just jump into the package.
So do you want to start, Leah, do you want to start, would you suggest we just start with, as Rebecca keeps describing, the low-hanging fruit, or just work through in order attachments B, C, D, E, and F?
I think it might be easiest for everybody following along with me if we just went through the packet in the order.
Okay.
Just so that we don't have to flip back and forth. So that would make the first item to be the civil assessment.
Let's make sure we all have the same page. So you're starting us
on page 8.
Right, the table on page 8.
Right.
So what are we looking at?
So what we've attached here are actually these are duplicates of sheets that we had distributed in the fall when we first were looking at this issue. So the numbers have not changed. And I think at the time, we decided that it wasn't timely to address the issue. So we set these sheets aside and didn't consider them. And so now we've just put them back into the packet to walk through.
Right. So there's two ways. I think we just made two ways for civil assessment. And the question was, do you take them and put them in a statewide pool and then allocate them out based on WACM? Or do you reduce each court's individual need based on the actual civil assessment collected locally?
I have a different, this won't surprise you, but I have a different alternative.
This is why we come early.
Yes. I try to keep you honest with you. That's part of my job.
And then, for the local revenues, I believe we only put that together, we didn't ever participate calling them and distribute fire weapons. That's not just right here, but there's a
piece of information that is not captured as well, and that I've already brought up with Judge Conklin and staff, is that there are a handful of courts that have commitments that are involved with Judicial Council and at least Department of Finance in one case that are tied directly to civil assessments. And so those, I've asked that those be brought into the factor as well so that those can be addressed with this, much like the MOE obligations are going to be addressed.
Tell me when you want me to give you my
go.
So I think civil assessments are somewhat a policy decision. There are some counties that do not apply civil assessments because, remember, by statute, they are in lieu of a warrant. And so in many smaller counties, they may decide we are not going to apply civil assessments because our sheriff will pick someone up. And it is, in my opinion, somewhat of a policy issue. I am opposed to pooling them for that reason, because I don't think courts that elect not to have civil assessments should gain. And I also think you lose the incentive of working. I think, you know, again, I'm going to pick on Ventura. I think they do a good job on their collections. And I think that they should be rewarded for their work compared to other counties. And quite honestly, in L.A., our civil assessments are so bad because our amnesty program was so good that, you know, it just seems this is not something that should be pooled. I do believe that if we're not going to address the MOE offset in another fashion, that should be paid in a more pooled fashion and perhaps whatever these contractual obligations are. But I think the money should go back in accordance with the amount that the counties contribute. So in other words, I'm going to make this simple. If you collect $100 and you have to subtract 10, right, you have $90 left, that $90 should be provided back to the counties based on their percentage of the overall $100 that was collected, because it's going to reward courts that do a really good job in collection, and those courts that collect zero would get zero. So I think that it's kind of a modified pool, but I would not use WACM. I would give it back to those counties that are contributing at the highest level. And again, that doesn't necessarily help LA because we, you know, we have so, you know, we just haven't, I've zeroed out our civil assessment for the last 3.5 years.
So can I, if I understand, so you basically you pull civil assessments, you take out the MOE obligation.
And whatever contractual
obligation, and then you allocate back out based pro rata on collection efforts.
Yes. So that those counties that are doing a really good job get rewarded for their efforts, and those that collect zero get zero.
Do you factor it in terms of their need, though?
No.
So it's completely outside of the need and the distribution.
Yes, because civil assessments, again, are not only a policy decision, but they are somewhat of a level of effort situation. And I do think that courts that have geared up, I think Mike's done a good job in gearing up his collections, and I think it should go back based on effort.
Okay, so?
Not need.
Okay.
But it calculates towards need.
So if you're saying count towards need at the branch level,
yes.
I would say that's probably right. It's interesting. I went through each one of these accounts that were in the agenda, and there are some that I think were probably counted in RAS, and there were a lot that were not. So we could certainly go through each and every one of them, because I see, you know, this is my notes to myself. I can see what the point is. I think from a branch standpoint, civil assessment are an odd one, because when you go through these accounting codes, there's some that offset staff, there's some that offset actual costs, and civil assessment is kind of a middle, because there are some costs you would not do if you issued a warrant, but the rest of it, yes, I would agree with you.
So how do you calculate, and this might sound like an overly simplistic question, I understand if there are courts that say we don't collect civil assessments, that's
right.
Easy to take them out.
Right.
But then you talked about recognizing collection efforts.
Yeah.
So once you get there,
yeah.
How do you recognize that between
because
some courts that maybe work, I mean, every court probably says they're diligent, but some diligence is a subjective term.
Not based on their effort, the amount they contributed to the total.
So it's actually what they
have. Yeah. We work really hard in our collections, but if I contribute zero, I get zero. And that's because, you know, the Board of Supervisors waives it all, or they give them, you know, and I shouldn't, yeah, we still do a lot of effort to get that, but I'm not contributing to the pot, so why should I get any of that back?
Mike and then Mike. Planet and then Roger.
So I agree with what Sherry's saying in large part about the, you know, the courts that collect ought not be penalized or disincentivized to do the collections. And because all you need to do is look at the collections report that's prepared by LATCO's team, and it's all over the place. And collection efforts range from zero to,
you know, 120%.
Let's not call it efforts. Let's call it success, because we work really hard, but the result is we have so many fee waiver people, and the board just authorizes them to. So we try.
Okay.
So it's not effort, it's results.
All right. That's fine. I can work with that. But kind of a related issue, when you get to the cost issue, if you're qualifying for 1436.7 as a, you know, you got all the bells and whistles for a certified collection program, you can write your costs up, right? You can take your costs off the top. For those courts that, and we've been doing that for so long, I don't know what it is for the courts that don't. So that's another differentiation, I think, is that the courts that don't have the full-blown collections program under statute can't recover the cost.
Are there courts?
They should.
I think everybody does. Everybody does.
So and I'm sorry, I should.
They didn't use them.
So,
yeah, for sure.
Mike Roddy had his hand up, and then I'll, Mike.
How do we account, I think what the question mark I have is, what we've heard over the last number of years is that, at least I keep looking from the external perspective, there's a decent sum of money that somehow is not being accounted for. And so when we talk WAFM, we exclude out all these other things, including civil assessments, but Zotko and John and others can correct me, but don't we get back from, you know, the administration and DOF and finance and LAO, what about that civil assessment money? Where does that fit in? And don't we have to at some point account for that? Now, I obviously would agree with Sherry and Mike and where we are in terms of that process, but how do we then account for the money that is coming in that somehow we're off-booking it at this point? Where does that go? Does that, and it gets to the question of, is that part of determining overall level of funding? Does it come in on the back end and then that becomes a factor that we use when we're calculating court need?
Yeah, I think if the subcommittee makes the decision and TCRC approves to include civil assessments in that manner, then what Zotko will be using is as a gap number.
Well, I kind of heard, Sherry, and I don't mean if I misrepresent, that we wouldn't do that.
No, we would. But it would count for.
Well, so I understand what the dialogue is. And the dialogue is that when we talk about, let's be very clear. What Lucy's inferring, or I guess trying to explicitly state, is we're talking about the gap, the WAFM gap. And when we talk about the state WAFM gap, should this or should this not be counted in reducing the gap? And my position is I see where most of it makes sense to reduce the gap. There are some offsets. But I would have to say I kind of agree.
So when we first came out with WAFM, the LAO said, what is this gap? And we defined it based on, you know, what the monies that were considered WAFM. But Anita at the time knew that there were other local revenues, and we had an internal discussion. We said, we know what we define as the WAFM revenues. And until we complete an analysis of the remaining local revenues, we will, for argument's sake, include it. And it, because it was over like a $1 billion gap, so reducing it by a couple of $100 million down to $800 million ensured that we didn't ignore that potential question of what it could be. And so it's historically been offset, not as the courts see it, but as the state sees the funding gap. And so we've talked about what level WAFM is funded at. Just from an intellectual standpoint, we've included it. And it's been something that we talked about as this body sort of existed, you know, 6 years ago when the question came up. So it has been there, but we always owed ourselves and our external folks to that analysis, which I think we're trying to get at. We're sort of taking it bit by bit. But it is important that we do acknowledge the value that those revenues have to your operations, and are they WAFM?
So I just want to clarify what we as staff will need from this committee ultimately is for every line on this Phoenix download, how should it be allocated and does it count in WAFM for every single line ultimately?
Maybe a couple observations. If in fact WAFM goes, or I'm sorry, if civil assessment goes to the level of branch need, from a policy perspective that troubles me, because here we are imposing fees and fines on people for our own benefit, which runs counter to everything we're hearing, you know, both state and nationally about, you know, the courts raising their own revenue for themselves and imposing fines on others that come back to us. And we keep righteously saying, no, that's not what we're doing. But in a sense, that is really what happens here, especially if it becomes a part of your operating budget.
Kim?
So from a policy standpoint, that troubles me. It'd be nice to take all that money, put it into the general fund per se, and then the state determines, you know, how much they're going to give us. As long as some of my budget's dependent upon the actions of my local judicial officers, creates a problem. But, but we are there.
Right. How do we get out of there? But we're there.
That's right.
Right. Kim?
So that's what I was going to speak to is a year ago or so, we talked about this, and when we talked about MOE offset and we talked about civil assessment and said, you know, let's push the MOE to state general funds, make them pay for it, not have it come up, because those were deals made with the state and the counties. But along with that, we would say, and you can keep all the civil assessment monies as well, so that that's no longer coming to the local courts, partly because we assumed that eventually we are not going to have an ability to apply civil assessment anymore. That's going to be taken away from us, and we're going to be left holding the bag with the MOE offset. An inability to have revenue coming in to pay for that, we're going to still be left holding it. So in order to push it off to the state, we were saying, and in turn, we'll give you civil assessment for however long that lasts. But taking it away from the local authorities.
I just don't see anybody doing that, though.
They're not.
I mean, they're
doing what? Taking away the
connection between, you know, raising revenue and local decisions, you know, case-level decisions.
Yeah, there are a couple of interesting, I mean, are they separate discussions? And as far as civil assessments, is the, you know, the one to say, we're told they're going to evaporate, they're going to disappear. So, okay, let's assume they're going to. You fill the hole, here's the dollar amount, and then we're done with the discussion, versus if they don't disappear, and if they keep going, they're a lifeblood is overstating it. But to address Sherry's point, then we have to recognize as they come in, where do they go? I guess from a return on investment curiosity that I have, if what I hear you saying, Sherry, is it's not worth the work.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a mix. That when I went through each one of these funding, wherever they are, these funding things here, which I did to show which ones I thought were included in RAS, which ones weren't, which were exact cost offset, which were not. Civil assessment are a mixed bag because there are statutory requirements you have to meet when you do WAFM. You have to send notices and you have to do, you know, that you don't with the warrant. But it's small compared to the bigger piece. And quite honestly, in L.A., back when civil assessments were actually real, they're not anymore, our average was not $300, it was $75 because they always got reduced in court anyway. So anyway, it's one of those things. I think you did the same thing.
No, I laughed because we had the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there are counties that there will be absolutely no reduction to the $300,
yeah.
Period.
And ours is completely.
And you have others where you say judicial discretion and the judge,
yeah.
I mean, we have a graduated system in San Diego, if a person comes in within so many days, it automatically drops down to 250 or 200.
Ours is 10 days, it's 150.
Something like that. So,
yeah.
Plays into, I think it will. Go ahead.
So I don't think it's two separate conversations, but I think it's almost, we have to take one step in order to do a second step. And I like the idea that Sherry put forward in terms of, you know, pulling it up at the state, maybe calculating it as far as the state gap, and then returning it back based on the results.
Based on the amount that you contribute to the total.
Right. Correct. And the reason I like that is because it would seem to me, and I would look to Block Code to correct me if this is wrong, but it would seem to me that that would put the civil assessments in a structure that you could then go and talk about as part of the budget and have maybe a future swap out for stable funding. But the second piece is I don't think we should disincentivize anybody who's doing a really good job at collecting or getting good results right now, you know, at least until, if there comes a point where those funds are swapped out level later, that's fine. But I think that those who have good results right now should be able to continue that. So am I wrong in that?
No, I mean,
it would
that is
frame it for
and
you?
I would say is that coming out of our
summer sessions, there were these questions about where do these revenues, in particular civil assessments, fit within, and we said we're working through that. And that was, for now, acceptable, but it was not something that went away in their minds, Department of Finance staff, as far as where do civil assessments fit. But in terms of the comment that somebody has said civil assessments are going away, I would couch it more as there's just this general concern about the level that folks are paying as far as, you know, having a traffic citation, and it just happens to impact civil assessments. But I don't think anybody has honed in on a particular issue, because that's a level of understanding that's been lost a bit at the legislature's side of things. You know, the LAO has set. It is just the overall level is too high, and that's why you get legislation on an amnesty. It's not going after civil assessments per se, but it just says, let's do a, you know, one has suggested, a six-year amnesty. It's just dissatisfaction with the structure that's been created, of which civil assessments are part of.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to just, since you were responding to mine, I would say that they're going away. It also brings in all the unenforceability that has happened to us in the last year, too. It's not just the dollar amount, but it's us not having any teeth to go after people.
But because of amnesty.
Right.
So Mike Planet, and then Mike Roddy, unless Mike Planet doesn't have a comment anymore. Did I miss one?
So I do have a question, though. Just help me understand. So maybe I missed this in discussion, but if it's trial court trust fund plus civil assessment, is that total the percentage overall to need, or is that separate?
That's why it's a little confusing.
Right.
Lucy's talking about civil assessment needs to be included in the statewide gap because so our need is $200. Our amount from the general fund is $100, but the gap is $100. But with civil assessment, it might be $120, so our gap is only $80.
Yeah,
so all
right.
That's what we're talking about.
Well, in that case, then the second comment is that civil assessment money is more like one-time money than ongoing money. That number is going to change every
time.
That is a good there
point.
Is no way of projecting it forward. So, you know, it's here today, it's gone tomorrow. And especially in an area that's so dynamic and so fluid. I mean, I'm working on the ability to pay stuff right now. There's traffic to civil, and turning that whole dynamic becomes a whole different, for which we don't have any authority to collect under current civil statutes if it becomes so. So we have to have the equivalent of the 1436.7 on the civil area. So this whole area is so dynamic, and with the Futures Commission supporting moves like that, that ball's really up in the air. Whether it's going to disappear or not, I don't know, but it's so dynamic. That's why I have a hard time wrapping my head around trying to find out where do we go next year when we may be, you know, the next 2-3 years, the whole system's going to be upside down.
The gap is fluid. It would be fluid. Funding will go up and down too. So yeah.
Funding's trending in one direction in this area, and it's down.
Yes.
Because taking off failure to pay, in and of itself, negatively impacts the revenue coming in from civil assessments. So they have gone after that by eliminating our ability to send FTP cases to civil assessment. Many of us are still trying to assess what that new level will be, because there continue to be failures to appear that would end up in a civil assessment situation. So I think we've seen the high point of civil assessment. The question is what's this new level it's going to, you know, set at? But it will definitely be less than what it is, and there may be other courts that are going to be in the situation that LA finds itself in, where they're at a zero or close to.
So are there suggestions just to sort of not narrow, but to focus this discussion about what we ask staff to bring to us as we work through this on our work plan for the upcoming year? I hear a lot of really good thoughts about moving pieces. Can we define those moving pieces? Can we come up with options as far as to say, I mean, can you give us numbers about what happens if A, B, C, and D kind of thing, Sherry?
Should we look at numbers? You know, numbers always make you focus on
okay.
counties. Why don't we talk at a policy level like we are now? I mean,
yeah.
If it feels right that we pull to meet the obligation and then award it back based on results, that's a policy level. And I always worry. That's why I hesitated before when I saw a net $1.6 million or a zero. I mean, I went with the zero. Sorry, Judge Buckley. But you know, I like operating at a policy level.
I agree with Sherry. And I was actually going to ask, is there anything from a policy level that we feel like we could start with and agree to? You know, is it the netting out of the obligations? Is it the factoring it at a state need, I mean, et cetera, et cetera?
And I think we would need to find all those local agreements.
I think you have them. The ones that you should honor are the ones that the Judicial Council approved, period.
Okay.
I don't think, you know.
I don't think it's a difficult effort, because I think we did take a stab at that before, and there's not a ton of them. But actually, even getting back to Sherry's comment about numbers, I don't think the numbers involved in those agreements should make a difference. It's either an obligation or it's not.
That the council agreed to.
Right.
Yeah. Because that makes it a state obligation. Yeah. Not a, yeah.
So I just want to say that civil assessments in the past have been a lifeblood for our court. We have to. We're tied to our county by statute, so they have the enforcement part of it. But I agree with Rebecca that we should gather the amount at a state, so we can start talking about it at a statewide level. And that while it shouldn't, I mean, if in fact the legislature continues and the governor continues to reinvest in the branch, there. I mean, I don't like civil assessments from a policy standpoint. I do think that it looks like we're putting money in our own pockets that we don't need to have, and I'd rather have that be somebody else's issue and not ours. But I think we need to collect the amount of money and be able to identify it. We shouldn't discourage anyone from doing what they're doing now because of whatever best practice might be, and then make decisions as it goes through. I mean, obviously, if someone collects civil assessments and it pushes them over 100% need or something, we can talk about that because we'll be able to see it. But we can't see it unless we start talking about it as in a statewide number. And then ideally we'd be able to have that conversation that, you know, we don't want or need civil assessments, but what does that mean to courts? And it may be that at that point the numbers look different and we could say we can just fold it into our WAFM analysis. Or if it does leave courts sort of in an unfair spot, that we address it in a different way. But I think we need to collect the information first and then have an intelligent discussion about it.
I agree with what Sherry is saying, because it becomes a policy decision when you look at the difference. For example, Sherry pointed out that her board of supervisors, that this is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with the board of supervisors who said,
waive everything.
We don't want people to have to pay. That may be unique to Los Angeles, but in other counties, you know, we all know what the differences are. But to try to, and that's why Sherry's point about how you look at it is very interesting, because trying to tie this into a WAFM analysis when you have these particular policy decisions that are being made by other body elected officials within certain counties, I think I would agree with the analysis that we have to make a decision on a policy basis with respect to these civil assessments.
Lucy?
I think the other thing the committee is going to have to tell us when they make a decision, and it's not whether it just counts towards the gap, it's whether it counts towards the court's funding level before we then overlay the WAFM policy. So if you are below the statewide average now, but your civil assessments put you above the statewide average, are you eligible for the first 50% or not? So we are going to have to get guidance for, it'll be probably 19-20, about how we apply these dollars.
Isn't that the same as this?
Yeah,
it is the same as dollars away. Just call it a different
rate. Yeah. Yeah, I would not count them. And again, it keeps hurting me, but I just think some of it's a policy decision, so much of it is out of your control if some of the decisions don't belong to you. And, yeah, I see what you mean, but I shouldn't disincentivize those counties that are successfully providing money to the pot.
Right. And I still want to point out that the money that from WAFM is ongoing money. Money that's gotten from the civil assessment is one time. So so you're kind of penalized in a sense by doing a good job collecting. That means your slice of the ongoing waffle pie gets reduced.
Let's talk about a different revenue source. And let's say your bad check fee, right? So you're, every year you're getting in revenue. Ultimately, you're going to have to decide at some point whether that counts towards WACM. And then does it count towards your funding need relative to your individual course?
So I would say no, Lucy. That's an example because that is directly related to the work to process the NFS check.
Although is it not included in RAS?
I don't know. That's one of the ones that I did tag as being counted in RAS. So, I don't know. We need to almost look.
So that, I'm sorry, Mike, and then did you have, I think that brings us back to, we got to set a policy here and work in as many parts of the policy as we can to define. Mike?
See, interestingly enough, in my mind, adding in those types of things does create the disincentive because why would I continue to do anything that gives me one-time or limited-term money when I can do nothing, have a greater WAFM need, and get a higher percentage of my budget fixed annually under WAFM? And so it's a perverse disincentive to do anything outside of WAFM because I want the most WAFM money I can get, right? That's stable, it's ongoing, and versus, you know, maybe the copy fee revenue comes in, maybe it doesn't. Maybe civil assessment comes in, maybe it doesn't. And here I am predicating my budget on a shaky ground. So it's that's driving me nuts just to think through that.
That's why I think it's been put off for so long. Quite frankly, it's a necessary analysis so that we can stand behind where we're at because if we want solid models, then to have a $150 or $200 million undefined pot, it really can undermine the validity of it because why aren't you dealing with that over there?
Yeah,
it's complicated.
It's almost, unless we're willing to say we're going to have 80% of the budget, everybody's the same, and the rest of it kind of floats depending on your individual incentives and programs, or we throw everything into the pot and just acknowledge that we're going to do more than others are going to do, and that's okay because we're all going to be 100% equal.
Because we're all going to gain by.
I know.
It doesn't feel right. Well,
especially in an era of decentralized management, which we've been pontificating about for the last 20 years.
I guess I would just come back to the idea that we just need to identify that pot and have a buyout on it and call it good.
But I think in response, I don't think we can get that done, though, until we move it up to the state so that we can work with it in that context. So, I'm wondering if we need to address all the different pieces of this immediately. What can we get buy-in on? I mean, where is everybody in terms of a common feeling? So does everybody feel like there should be some kind of a buyout of those MOE and other obligations? Does everybody feel like it should be moved to the state and distributed back in some fashion so ZLOGCO can work with it? Is the fashion of distribution where we're stuck? You know, I mean, could we get to the point where we have some decisions that we can agree on a recommendation for going forward to everybody who's not in this room?
How is that different than what we're doing now? Because we collect all that money, we send it up, and we get everything back after the MOE.
No, well, because it only impacts 36 counties.
I understand, but that's where we are today. So how does that change if we continue to send the money back?
So is the problem the perception of it?
Well, I
think it equalizes the MOE part of it primarily, right?
It equalizes that plus any other what I will call state obligations. The MOE offset was a legislative obligation they didn't fulfill. The others, and I don't know what they are or how many there are, but if the Judicial Council signed off on them, they're now a state responsibility. And if the funding stream was seen as civil assessment back in the world when that was a stream, that's a state obligation. So those things should be paid back, in my opinion, and then they should be given back based on results to the pot. because that way it motivates those counties that are collecting to continue to collect.
I agree.
To me, it's exactly what we're doing today.
We're not, though, because there's only...
You only get back what you get back after you've satisfied the MOE obligation.
But it wasn't mine to satisfy.
I understand.
Okay.
What if you don't make the MOE obligation? That's the problem.
The trial court trust fund's already paid it because I have not made it.
Well, there's other obligations, too, though, that the trial court trust fund is not paying.
We fulfilled the allocation.
Reserve funding's been paid.
By fund balance in the... Yeah.
That's exactly
but
right.
If you're going to sum up the money back to me at a certain point, what are you sending back to me?
Well, so again, if we collect 100 and the obligations are only 20, the 80 would still go back to the courts based on what they give to the 100. For me, it might be nothing. For you guys, it might, you three, it's going to be a bigger chunk.
Well, what if you collect 20 and your obligation's 100?
It's not our obligation, though. That's the missing piece.
So the courts that currently don't have an MOE obligation will end up getting less back than they used to.
That's right.
Courts that don't have a current MOE obligation will start getting less back.
They're going to start paying.
Everyone's going to pay towards the MOE.
Yes.
All 58.
Well, so you either pay it out in similar assessment or you pay it out in trial court trust fund. Because it is a legislative obligation. And I actually have that. So here's all the amounts here. And the pink courts are the ones under the average. The 15 and the 20, yes, that are under the state average that are paying back, you know? So I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah, I need to see it laid out before I can, because I'm still having a perceptual problem figuring it out.
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think what we need to do is define what we, this is going to sound silly, but there's so many different, right now, valid considerations. We don't have them on paper. I think we need to get to work within a set of known information exactly how are all these moving pieces going to come together and how do we do that.
And I just wanted to say why I think it needs to just be outside of the statewide average is, for example, Sherry's comment where it counts in the RAS, but if it ends up being zero, then you end up, it's like you get the workload and you get the money in your budget, and if you end up making a little bit off of it, then it counts against. I think in reality, once we have it in a statewide dollar amount that pays a sort of state obligation, we can define what that is, and then I think we do talk about how we can not have that anymore and how it folds into a larger statewide budget but I don't think that it changes, and I may be wrong, but I don't think it changes anybody's annual budget so much, especially as the numbers are going down, that it wouldn't be a long-run benefit to not have civil assessment be something that we use to finance our course. Because it is one, it's turning into one-time money. You can't budget on it. You can't really do anything with it. It's just a windfall to some extent now.
So what do you want?
So what information do we feel is missing in order to make a policy decision?
I'm hearing that Mike really wants to see the calculations. Now, one thing we could do, the reason I include...
Do it at a statewide level.
Right, or we can do fictitious numbers. I mean, ultimately, the reason we had the numbers in for the last item was
I
felt...
You say hypothetical, it's not fictitious.
Sorry. I felt it's too complex to get your head around it without seeing the numbers. But it does derail it. So we could do a hypothetical there. Sorry.
Or just use actual, but yes. Do it as state average, where
right.
We collected this,
yeah.
This is the debt, this is...
So what's the impact?
Options. The options
yeah.
Would be on how to reallocate WACM, which I don't think any of us like, because it's
right.
Incentivized, the course, or based on what you put in the pot.
So then the hypothetical would include the collections, the MOE and obligations,
and the local agreement.
And then... Do we want, when you say at a statewide level, you just want to see statewide totals, or do you want to see the proportional?
So explain that then, so I understand. What you're proposing is we take a whole number, whatever the total number.
So if you look at page 13, and you see what the MOE offset is, and you see the need amounts, and you see all of those amounts. I mean, if you look at Ventura, for example, they have an MOE offset of $1.9 million almost. It's 5% of their WACM allocation. That's huge. They are the biggest of their WACM allocation. San Bernardino, which is the fourth most underfunded county in the state, theirs is 4.6 of their WAFM allocation. You know, all of these pinks, 15 of them, are under the average at almost $16 million. So my point is that we shouldn't make it a county-by-county thing. It should be a state policy thing, like we've talked about. So how much we collected, how much would be subtracted, and then the options on how you would reallocate.
But
Lawson, does
that
satisfy the U.S.
budget?
Yeah.
Is that enough information, or
does
not identifying how there's
always going to
it, or how it fits or doesn't fit within
Lawson or I mean, I'm not, I can't speculate on where they'll be. But, I mean, they try to budget at a higher level, and hopefully that we can explain how we're using our money in a way that policymakers understand it. At some point, there's a detailed level that we need to manage. So I don't want to speculate on whether they would be satisfied. We have a new team there. Their level of looking into things is varied from the prior team. So part of the budget is because they dove in. You know, I think that they want to be engaged with what we're doing and understand it. But they also understand that sort of the branch management.
Sherry?
The other thing I like about this approach, too, is it does tee up transferring it to the state, because it's saying we have state obligations, one the legislature didn't, and one that the council has signed off on agreement, right? So it's kind of saying we take care of our state obligations first, and if you take these away, you're going to have to meet these at a minimum.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that kind of tees it up a little.
They do meet the MOE that is part of the base allocations in the backfill for the TCTF.
Yeah, for the ones we don't need.
So that is
the outside
acknowledgement.
Defining
that amount.
Mm-hmm.
But the
inequity
among the overall WAFM gap. And then
that, I think, is a different discussion than
okay.
The obligation, at least, to maintain your allocations whole.
Yes.
With the defining civil assessments.
Copies of all of the MOEs. Didn't audit services ask when John was there obtain copies of every MOE?
We'll ask.
So what I hear and what I was just discussing here was I think what we're trying to do our best to do is not get amounts but defy amounts in the sense of
statewide
civil assessments.
You don't need those.
MOEs and any other agreement that Sherry describes as it's got to be easy to know what they are because they're only agreements.
State agreements.
And what are those amounts? Figure out that total amount, define it, and then come up with a policy about once it goes in, how does it come back out again? Is that oversimplifying it?
No.
I see some skepticism.
I just thought that was addressing the issue, but I like it.
So how do you think it's not addressed? That's a valid concern. How do you think it's not addressing the issue?
I think when we started this conversation about what courts are getting what for that amount and all of the different obligations that some of the courts have that aren't getting anything but are obligated to pay back, we're not pulling any of that out anymore. So we're just going back to it's a statewide issue, which I think needs to be addressed, and I agree with that approach. I'm just not sure that we've addressed what we had put it on the list to do. So if we're stepping back from that, we're saying our first approach is to look at it as a statewide
guideline
with that approach for this 18-19.
Are you talking about local agreements that have commitments?
Right.
The ones that – okay, so I think we're saying yes, include those as long as we have that documentation. I think there's some people who have commitments to their civil assessments that are just commitments that the court is making. Right. So I think we're talking about including those.
Okay.
Well, no, the judicial council approved only.
Right. The state agreement. Right.
They have a local agreement with their county.
Right. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be part of the – I just want to be careful that we get this all on the table. We understand we clearly define it. So there is, from what I understand it, not being a CEO and just being a PIBI PJ for a few years, there are – the perception is there's some side agreements that are not part of these council agreements. And if there are, we need to put it in the policy about if they're not council agreements, they're not considered. But we've got to define it. So we got to make sure.
So do these local agreements generate revenue for the court, or is the commitment of court to pay to the county for some service? What are they?
Yeah, it could be. So as an example, I'll use Santa Clara as an example. For us, it commits our civil assessment to the facility program for a debt service payment. But the civil assessments have fallen through the floor, so there's no funds. So Santa Clara is still paying for that.
Well, we can.
The court is still paying for that.
So if we can get those, at least
that's
the information on those,
correct,
and get those within the policy, then maybe if we start with the policy, then maybe as we get into the policy, we can then say, okay, but now there are some courts that have these undefined obligations. How are we going to deal with them? I don't want to ignore them.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we wouldn't include those. If those are enforceable agreements, then...
And the council agreed to them.
Well, but are there some that... I don't know that I would have an opinion on it until I know what those side agreements are.
Right.
These courts have enforceable side agreements that the council didn't agree to that they can't get out of anyway, and they're still having to pay for. I'm not sure why we wouldn't want to know that information before they
consider. That's an additional category that you look at.
So maybe
well, maybe
we should ask for all agreements that are connected that can be documented. How's that?
Some of the reasonable time periods. If you've got it, tell us about it so we can at least deal with it.
Well, we need the details. I'm
right.
Sorry, Mike.
No, go ahead.
We need the details.
Right.
Is it enforceable, or can they sit back out of it? Because if they can, then
yep,
that's a different kind of an agreement.
Right.
But if they choose not to tell us about it, then they choose not to tell us about it, and it's their own
deal,
and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with it.
Right.
So it's not a criticism approach. It's not an approach of punishment. It's just an approach of if they're out there, got to get it all on the table so we can put it within the policy about how we're ultimately going to do it.
Yes, yeah, the minimum if you want considered, don't if you don't.
Right. But we come up with, we're not going to kick this can down the road any further.
I
so agree. we're going to put it in a policy. We're going to get it clearly stated. Mike, Roddy?
The MOE amounts were essentially local agreements that were, for lack of a better phrase, codified into the statute when the MOE was set. They were local agreements. The council had nothing to do with those agreements, but they are now part of the MOE. I think what we're addressing are those outside of the MOE for which there are other additional commitments for facilities or other things beyond the $48 million in the MOE, and the question is whether those extra items are council approved or not.
Yes.
Just to frame the issue.
And as Sherry is... stated that maybe we're making a bunch of maybe spend a lot of time on something that doesn't exist. We need to find out if it exists. So I think we can.
Well, I know there's the Santa Clara agreement. I don't know if there are others.
There's local agreements that the council did not approve.
Right. So if you have a local agreement that was not approved as part of the MOE, tell us about it. Here we have 60 days. Tell us about it. Define it. What's the obligation? What's the amount? We have a total amount of civil assessments, total amount of MOEs, and we get everything defined so we can then come back and say, okay, I think we're starting to focus on the policy, but I think we're concerned about setting a policy until we know the overall impact. So where does that get us today? What do we want to tell staff to do, do you think you have enough?
So can we send that request out to the courts following this meeting? That'd be great.
Everybody hear that? We're going to send that request out to the courts, what do you think, 60 days? I don't know, when's our next meeting?
It won't be, well, May 21st.
Okay.
Let me think about it.
Okay, I don't think it should be difficult once we send out the notice to get the information back, though.
30,
yeah. And that way we can have it by the next meeting.
Yeah.
So this is the end of, this is March 26th, so we give them the month of April, by April 30 days, by April 30th, please provide to council staff any agreement you have that you feel is not already included as an MOE. Is that an appropriate definition?
Yeah, I think so.
That are not already included?
Well, I hear discussions of...
Aside from the MOE.
Aside from the MOE, right? And because we can define the MOEs, right?
The MOEs are defined.
Right.
Right. The dollar amount.
Yeah. No.
By county.
Yeah, I mean, we know what those are, but those aren't with the county.
No. No, I think what we're saying is we can identify what
that amount.
Yeah, yeah, for each county. Right. Each court, I should say.
And even if they didn't, isn't there, you know, with all of this, you've got all of this stuff, so if you see revenue flow,
that
and it's
not
defined,
right,
you know what that is.
Make one comment that I think is a slightly different perspective. It's been a great conversation, and I don't have much to disagree with at all. But it seems to me that what the legislature did in 1998 now was that we're gonna structure your funding in this way. We know you're not getting enough money to do what you need to do, and so we're gonna create this or allow this. Allow a way for the local courts to make up the difference, and they did. And some courts have done a better job, not a better job, but different, taken a different approach to civil assessments. And in doing that, to some extent, we're going against kind of the philosophy of courts of judging. And as PJs have to tell their judges, you know, you do what you need to do with civil assessments, but know that it comes out of the budget, and that's not a comfortable position for judges to be in. But we have done that because that's what our state has told us to do. It's worse in some other states. You know that when you drive through and you see the speed traps. But and we've come a long way to get away from it, but we're still to some extent at that point. And so taking away that auxiliary method to meet your budgetary obligation, not sure it was be consistent with what the entire scheme was when it was
well, I think that's a very valid point. It's something we should keep within the policy discussion when we get this information back at the next meeting. And so I think Judge Heinrich said that, I heard Kim Flender say that, of, you know, the overall message of this, the perception from the public is we're just doing this to build our own bank accounts. That's anything but what's happening, but it's a perception. And if the perception exists, we got to address it. As
right.
Part of the policy.
And that's part of my point. The other part is that is what the state has imposed on us, and I don't think we should go too far away from that.
I just got an email from one of our listeners. Said every year we have to fork out $330,000 a year until the year 2030 coming from the civil assessment money.
So that would be another one that should be.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're giving.
Responded, that's one you need to turn.
Yep. So that's why we're trying to be as clear as we can. We'll get notice out and as broad but as clear as possible. Okay. If you have an agreement that you want to be considered, tell us about it. And I think as Latko said it or Mike said it, if you don't tell us, that's your business. But if you don't tell us, then it's not going to be addressed.
Right.
Okay. So let's see. I'm just getting back to our work plan. I don't know if you guys, if we've been at it now for an hour and a half. Does anybody need a quick break, or can we let's talk about self-help? Oh, we need a 10-minute break, which is going to turn into 15. So recognizing that, could we all please be back in the room at 11:45 so we can start right away instead of turning a 10-minute break into a half-hour break? So for those on the phone, do I need it?
Yes.
15 minutes, 11:45. All right, it's 11:45. I'm unmuting because we are going to reconvene at noon rather than 11:45 for anybody that's calling in. So I apologize for the delay. We'll reconvene at 12 noon. Thank you. All right, we're going live again. Thank you all calling in for your patience. We just had a little unanticipated delay, but we're now rolling, and we've worked through lunch, actually. So what we're going to do is keep going and with every effort of making this, adjourning this by 3, if not before 3, recognizing the need to discuss all these items fully, which takes us next to self-help funding sources and methodology. This is attachment 3 of your materials that you all have. I'm going to turn to James Baird, who's present in the room with Bonnie Huff as well, as sort of both experts on these topics, to present.
I'll do a brief overview, and for those of you that don't know Bonnie, she's a managing attorney at CSCC, and she can answer more in-depth questions that I may not be able to answer. But basically, I was tasked with just a quick overview of looking at the funding source methodology of self-help. You've all got this. I won't read the whole thing, but essentially it started back in 2007 with the Budget Act. What we currently have is $11.2 million, 6.2 of which is TCTF, and the rest is IMF. The TCTF is split into two parts. It's kind of a historical piece where 3.7 is built into the base of the TCTF, and the additional is available once the other has been expanded. In the future, we have in the current budget is an additional $19 million, and we're hoping that that goes through. With those proposed additional funds, will be a little over $30 million in the budget. You've got in front of you the courts. They're one-time and ongoing costs. Those are the two TCTF portions that are split. The current methodology has a $34,000 baseline amount, and then the rest is proportionally allocated based on the population in the county. That's based on 2005 census data, and I know Bonnie and her staff are looking at updated numbers on that. So I'll leave it with there if anyone has questions.
Could you say that again, that the funding is based on, I heard the 2005, and yes, we should update it, because things have especially changed in the Inland Empire area with population. But what was the first part?
There is a $34,000 baseline.
$34,000
per quarter.
Got it.
Baseline. And then the remainder is proportionally allocated based on the population. The additional part I neglected, the judicial council requires at least 80% of the funding used for staff. So the majority of that money goes directly to staff time. It's still okay for stuff else.
Mike?
Have we had any studies on the extent to which the current allocation underserves, and I'll just say that it probably underserves, the populations in the counties disproportionately? In other words, is need pretty standard throughout, or I would assume that in some counties that this current level of funding underserves more people than, let's just say San Diego and Orange County, that we have roughly the same amount of money, but they have more underserved people because their population is different than ours is, to assess whether this current funding methodology makes any sense. I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
Yeah, no, you are. No, do you mind if I? Okay. No, we haven't done that. What I will say, what the $34,000 was intended to do was give everybody something, right? And nearly all courts now have collaborated with their family law facilitator. So usually, and that was sort of between the $34,000 and whatever the facilitator was getting, it was enough to get an attorney into those jurisdictions. And what we know is that the funding for legal services programs varies dramatically county to county, and rural communities are distinctly underfunded. And so there's basically no services the figures are dramatic in some of those rural communities. So that was the basic framework for that. And with the larger counties, I think they've done remarkable work in trying to use those funds as effectively as possible in terms of workshops and using technology and other kinds of things that are much more difficult in a small community to have a workshop where people go, oh, yeah, you're getting the divorce, whatever. Though there's some, you know, with the innovation grants, I think there's some really exciting things in terms of online workshops and other collaborations. But I don't think we have. I mean, one of the things we're looking at in terms of looking at census data is we're looking at low-income households, looking at single parent, and then LEP because of limited English proficiency. Because the thing that the facilitators have identified as the thing that takes them the most amount of time is when people come in with limited English proficiency. And it's partly just whether there's translation, but it's also understanding, helping people understand.
And then one follow-up question. Any information on the extent to which courts have supplemented or added to the base funding because they need more? And it hasn't been there in the 11.2?
I'm looking at Phoenix, trying to see if I can figure that out. But it may be the kind of thing that would be reasonable. We have the opportunity to do quarterly reporting for the self-help, and that's one of the things I've been thinking about that would be really helpful to know now before we hopefully get the $19 million to get a sense of where the courts are at.
Sherry?
So are we to assume that there will not be a discussion around a new funding methodology, that we're going to continue, you're going to update from the 2005 to whatever the most recent census is, and that there's not a dialogue on that? That's a question.
Well, I don't think we're saying there's not a dialogue. I think maybe we need to have a dialogue to see if whether or not there is a more effective funding methodology after we get the update from the new data. But I would agree with you. I think we need to have a discussion.
Yeah.
I think one thing that was just to throw it out there that was discussed is there's obviously the overlap with 1058 and the family law facilitator program and those things. And I know that with those conversations going on in other committees, some of the same things that Bonnie brought up about low-income LEP have been discussed. I just don't think that at this point any of us had, we're looking to you for you guys.
Just a couple of thoughts is that if we get the $19 million, we're going to have something. If we're going to be doing any participation in that, there's not a whole lot of time before next fiscal year when the money comes in. And, you know, Alaska, as you know, has got an amazing telephonic self-help service that would be so perfect for some of the smaller counties and rural counties here that, you know, I know it's hard to have people there, but Alaska is so big. I think they do a really good job with self-help.
I think they do too, and we looked at that model a number of years ago, and to do that in California at least would have taken 110 staff people to do something comparable. But I am actually investigating going up on Friday to find out more.
So anyway,
I think there are lots of models that we can be looking at for sure.
The AB 1058 discussion, by the way, is ongoing and ongoing. Judge Cope, Rebecca, and myself sit on the joint subcommittee, and we had a meeting a week ago, 2 weeks.
Another 2 weeks,
and then a tentative two-day meeting about 3 or 4 weeks after that. So it's somewhat akin to the work that this group did when they flushed through a funding methodology suggestion.
So going back to my question then is that it's on our work plan, and we have money that's going to be rolling in July 1. What, if anything, are we going to be doing to help with the dialogue around the funding methodology to be used for the 19 as well as the 11.2? No, that was you. You're the boss. You two are the boss.
Well, the question is, is your question, do we have time to do anything?
No, I think we need to do something. Are we going to be involved in that dialogue so it doesn't just get distributed outcome July 1 and we haven't had any input on what methodology should be considered?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I think it's important to make decisions in advance of July 1, because what you don't want to do is allocate the 19 and then have to go through the pain of whack-em with a new methodology the following year. Right.
Well, we're talking about 18, 19, or 19, 20? 18, 19.
Wow. The BCP, I'm sorry, I was just asked. The BCP contemplates a formulaic distribution based on population and some sort of baseline.
But it refers to updated proposed allocation methodology in the implementation plan. So there is a table that reflects potential based on the current
but the DCP does discuss that a methodology will be looked at to update.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not the right way. Right. It's just that there isn't a lot of time left to get this to the council for approval, because this money is going to hopefully be approved. And
right, that was my hesitation, because if this is approved and gets rolled out when in July,
yeah,
and we're now essentially through
right.
March.
Yeah, it sounds like we don't really have a role, which is...
Well, the question becomes then, is this one time?
No.
So do we, I mean, one option is to say we don't have enough time to make a change to it for year one, but we keep it in our work plan to then look at it and say as it continues to move out. Right. I just don't know how we have to have...
I totally agree. That's why I keep raising it, because we need to know what, rather than just say, oh, we don't have enough time, just update population, let's be done with it. We need to figure if that's what we're going to do, okay, check. But if not, then what are we going to do?
Well, I think we – so my thought would be, and obviously it's just one thought, is for the year in 18-19, we don't have enough time. So we get updated figures, census figures, and it goes out pursuant to that.
Okay.
But then we keep it on our work plan to say, okay, well, now that we have that and we see the way it's distributed, is that – are we comfortable with that, or do we need to come up with a new methodology?
I concur with Judge Conklin.
Yep.
I'm not impressed.
So is there I don't think I can make a motion.
Yeah, I do too. So,
do you want a motion?
Okay.
I make a motion that we go with 18-19 as it's set out the currently
yep.
Based
set
on
out.
Updated figures? Because we'll have those updated figures
based
in time.
On,
okay.
Based on the updated figures, but for 19-20 years out, that this continues within our FMS work plan for update. Potentially,
all we're talking about is the work plan. So we can't make a motion. I'm sorry, can we do that?
I thought it was on for action, but you're right. Let me check.
Well, discussion of possible action.
Yep.
Yeah, it's under the materials on the agenda.
All right.
And the work plan, I think you're right. The work plan shows it as a 18-19 action item.
And ultimately, all allocations will be approved by kickbacks.
Kickbacks meetings a week from Thursday. And you'll all be there, right?
It'll be May 1st, end of May.
Another
That's right. This can't get on the agenda for the next kickback because we don't have enough time to get the materials posted.
Oh, yes, yeah, connect.
So there's been a motion, as I will paraphrase, if not state as clearly as possible, from Judge Maraganda, that this committee approve the current funding methodology updated by census figures for the 18-19, and then we keep it on our work plan for 19-20 to evaluate that distribution to determine whether or not that methodology needs to be updated. Is that appropriate, Judge?
Sorry, I don't see that on the agenda. Where the consideration of that.
So on page 2, discussion and possible action items 1 through 3, and item 2 is, oh, I'm sorry.
I must have an old version of the agenda.
I have as attachment C under item 2, yeah.
Right.
Action required, yeah.
Page 2.
Yeah.
Prioritize and take possible action on the funding methodology subcommittee work plan items.
I
don't think it is, John Coates.
You might be looking at the agenda. Are you looking at the agenda we approved as part of the minutes from the last meeting?
Date on it could be November. That's what I was looking at. No?
Don't worry about it. Okay. Everybody else is on the same
page. So there's a motion. Is there a second to Judge Maraganda's motion?
I'll second.
Ms. Carter is second on the motion. Any further discussion on the self-help funding sources and methodology as set out in attachment C, which to Judge Cope's credit does say information only on it, but that's just that's the information in the item, I believe.
Right. Not the agenda item.
Exactly. Any further discussion? Anybody opposed to the motion or confused by the motion? I don't want to rush through this if anybody has any further questions.
I have a question, just a clarification for the SLATCO. When you were reading the language, was that from the governor's proposal that you were reading that? And the tape, and you said
the change proposal that we submitted in support of the 19.1.
Oh, okay. It's not something we have that that's detailing out how it's to be used or anything like that.
Right. Well, it's not in the materials. It's just, but it's on the web.
Okay.
That's why it's been put up as in support of the.
Got it. Got it. Thanks.
Any further discussion on the motion that's been seconded? Any opposition to the motion? Hearing no opposition, any abstentions from the motion? Hearing none, I'll deem that motion unanimously approved by FMS. Okay.
So is the committee going to have a discussion now about other proposed methodologies? What's the next step?
Well, Bonnie mentioned three things she wanted to look at, and I would assume that she would gather information so that she would bring them forward to say, we find that LEP adds X amount, and we can use this data to apply that as a factor, right? Is that kind of what you had in mind?
So you know what you're doing?
I think so.
Okay, good.
Okay. All right.
Good.
In your opinion, can this money be used for LEP? Because I don't think 10 blah, 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 which used to be 4545, right. 10058, whatever. I don't think it can be used for self-help.
The interpreter?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't remember.
They can't.
Okay.
Let me just say
because
they can't.
Because I will say, well, other courts have different interpretations.
Well,
so
it's not a reimbursable. So what, by the end of the year, if they're putting it in correctly, it's not reimbursed.
Okay. And that may be that they have interpreters in their self-help centers who are being reimbursed for self-help.
Staff interpreters.
That is certainly possible.
Yeah, so there are
the staff interpreters.
Yeah. Oh, say that again. If I have a staff interpreter in my self-help center, what?
You have a staff interpreter that you've assigned there, but if you're using a contractor, even different, if you want to use LanguageLine to help people when they come to the counter, it's not reimbursable.
So,
yeah, it really is a problem that we need, that somebody needs to address in terms of the restrictions around what used to be 45. Is it 10058, whatever it is? Yeah, there you go.
George Cope?
Different question. We talked about updating the census figures. Was there a reason why they weren't updated?
There was a real interest in maintaining stability. At that point, but I think we're definitely at a point where we need to look at them.
And then the more important question is, by updating them, we'll use current population numbers?
We're using whatever the most recent census data is.
As current as it
gets. Yeah, no, it'll really have, it's certainly a potentially big impact.
Okay, 2017 just came out.
In 2010?
They
have the State Department
of Finance because demographic value. Updates.
So I guess my follow-up question, Judge Maragondo made a motion, but what if the updated numbers result in potential significant cuts to courts?
What's that?
What if the updated numbers result in potentially a jurisdiction taking a significant cut? Do you want to look at it before you approve it for implementation for...
I think if you're adding 19 million into the pot,
okay, all right.
In a lesser growth that you might have otherwise had.
Okay, got it.
So if we, which is a good question, if we don't get the 19 million, how would you like to proceed?
That's an interesting point. We don't want to make it worse than it is. Well, when I say worse, so if then, yeah. So motion's been moved and approved, but the contingency that was just raised was, what if, in fact, the 19 million doesn't come through, then I would suggest that the motion is conditional on the 19 million coming through. Is that
so amended?
So the motion would be conditional upon four additional funding coming through. I mean, what if it's 10 million instead of 19 million?
It's contingent on any additional.
Okay. And Ms. Carter, is that what you understood when you seconded the motion?
No, but. I have a little heartburn because I know there's been population shifts, big ones, in California since 2005. I always like to follow you, Judge, but I don't know. It just feels like we need to protect the courts that need the base. I understand that, but that means that there are more people turned away in high populous counties, and that shouldn't happen either, because this is to help people. So I don't know if I would base it just on new money.
I think the problem we have is timing and the fact that we have to make a decision. We have if additional funds come in, Judge Cope.
If they don't, and I think there's a good chance they will, but if they don't, then I think we ought to have it on the agenda for June and talk about it right away. But I also think we need to, and that's mostly to just so we have somewhere to go. But I also think we need to talk about what the census numbers are. That's not whether it's, you're right, the actual census is only every 10 years, but we can get much more current population numbers from other sources besides the federal census and whether we ought to be using those.
Don't we use the state numbers or do you use the federal?
I think this is from whatever but we can use whatever numbers, but I think the numbers that I'm working with come from the.
So I was just talking to Lucy to see if there's time to have it come back to FMS before it goes to the council so we can deal with that contingency. And I believe there's time.
We'll have May revise. You won't have a budget act, but we'll know what's in the May revise for the next FMS meeting.
Okay. So I would ask that it be placed, re-agendized for the next FMS meeting. So this has been moved and seconded. We'll move forward, but we will also keep it as a potential action item on the next FMS meeting to address.
Did Charlie second or not?
Yes.
What's the actual motion?
Of course.
So what's the actual motion to fund this?
To allocate funds for self-help centers pursuant to the current methodology as modified by updated census figures to be re-agendized for the May FMS meeting for final recommendation to Judicial Council at its July meeting.
The additional funds coming in.
We all know what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to figure out how to get there. All we want to be able to say is, if new funds come in, how are they going to be allocated,
yes,
recognizing
right.
that we've got to make that decision real fast.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
All right.
This is for 18, 19,
and then we'll address. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Does that give staff what they need?
Thank
you. Great. Phew. Okay. So now we go to attachment C. D, I'm sorry. All trial court funding sources, which I think, I don't know what thoughts are in the room about how we've already discussed this and how this plays in with the civil assessments and local revenue discussion.
It does.
Okay.
I personally don't think
it doesn't, except for Lucy's question. There were two prongs to the civil assessment. One was, how do we take care of obligations and then reallocation after that's met? And the other one is, what do we count against the statewide gap? And I think for that piece, some of these are probably included in. I saw several that were probably measured as part of RAS. And I don't know, it seems like it would be kind of difficult to pick those out to reduce the gap, but I don't know. I mean, they are a line item in the financial statement.
All right.
Do we need to do that?
So, I guess the question is, does the committee want to go through line by line, or does the committee want us to start and come back with a proposal that is a starting point?
Yes.
Well, then, I'll take Sherry. there's also a number of line items on there that are generic.
So what are we trying to accomplish with this?
Reduce the statewide gap.
By defining all trial court revenues?
No, by figuring out those things that were also measured as part of the RAS measurement that are now outside of the funding. So we measured it, so it's part of WAFM, but we're counting this money, but not reducing the gap.
Okay.
Right?
Right. So everything is, every bit of revenue that the courts get is in here. So, for instance, judges' salaries on this list, so you're going to pay court not, right? Judges, no. And then there's going to be ones that are obviously yes, and then there's going to be ones that we're going to debate. So I guess do you want us to come start to do an analysis and come back to what we believe should be RAS related? And then whether we get more information on the local fee 1, 2, 3, what might
be? Going to have to make that assessment for us as a preliminary matter because
none of us has the level of detail necessary to sit here and do that on a account by account basis.
So do I hear everybody saying that the request of staff would be to come back to us as sort of with the...
As long as they know what the charge is.
The charge is to come back with those that are clearly in, those that are clearly out, and those that are subject to debate?
I think so.
And if anybody has anything now that they'd like to provide to staff as their initial thoughts, that would be helpful as well.
Oh, is that fine?
He was looking.
Sherry has her paper.
Oh, gee, I just need to get a life. That's the problem.
Formally said we'd like a copy of
Carter's not going to take a vacation for the first time in 20 years.
So we're trying to identify these that are already covered in RAS, those that are not, and those we would recommend to the Workload Advisory Committee be included in RAS?
No.
Because what is and what isn't?
Yeah, and if it isn't, it doesn't count towards reducing the gap.
Right. I think when we're saying in and out of RAS, what we are trying to say is, does the revenue cover a source of workload that's already measured by the RAS model?
So when you say reducing the gap specifically, what are you saying?
Well, it may not reduce the gap, but I guess it will make more clear when we say our WAFM allocation, do we feel more confident that we are counting the right sources.
We have allocated pursuant to WAFM.
Before we talk about the gap, let's understand where we think these fit, and then understand what, because we haven't done this comprehensive review, what then it means. Because we might be arguing something that we now upon discovery of what these are.
Don't want to do anything with
really it. Understand them and be prepared to defend them and justify them. Through the issue of transparency, we've called this aside. Now we're looking at them. Let's understand them first before we make any decisions about the implications of putting them in one part or the other.
Now that
we're deliberate about it.
There are four buckets of generic, which is about $25 million. I guess the question is, do you want us to try and find out what's in there too? So the biggest one is on like page 29, local fees. Local fees 821121 through 56.
So I'm going to take a guess that it's in a generic bucket because there is no more breakout even at the local level. Just a hunch. So I'm not sure that even if you dig into it too much, there's going to be a lot of detail behind that. I know we have.
We would do things like charge someone for a bar card, right? So, I mean, there's all these little things.
Things that don't fall into
any other category.
So, is the question, do we want you to drill down any further within these categories?
There is going to be some data in Phoenix, some of it. What do we want
to get? That you have it.
Okay.
That's just one thought, though. The rest of you, please.
I guess stated another way, are these categories in and of themselves sufficient? I see some head nod saying yes. I'm not the CEO in the room, so.
Is what you're describing then kind of a $25 million margin of error?
$25 million of stuff that doesn't belong anywhere else.
Wow. I mean, I guess I'm okay with that, but that's kind of a lot of money. Okay with.
A little.
I want to know who got this $88 for the child appointment.
Yeah. Where's the $25 million that he's referring to?
$303 for my son.
Well, does anybody have a? I mean, I understand Judge Cope's comment. Any concerns about that?
You know, a lot of this though is up to the court's categorization. So right. And then I guess I take a little bit different view. $25 million in the grand scheme of a $3+ billion is like a rounding error, but I understand we ought to try to tighten that up.
But a lot of it's
the reporting guidelines, and some courts choose to put things in different categories even though they may be the same.
So this might be an example of Lucy just said phase two. This we don't want to bite off more than we need to. If this is a good first step, come back with this, and then we decide from there, do we need to go further? But I think if we can accomplish this step, that's a significant step forward.
Yeah.
Ms. Cope, are you comfortable with that?
I'm sorry.
Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I guess my question is when this income or revenue is described or reported, it's not described at all. It's just described as miscellaneous court-specific code.
Sometimes there will be there'll be a text field where they can say.
But only sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think it's mandatory. No. So courts can just do that.
Okay. Then I think we do have to be okay with that. We'll work on that as we get an opportunity.
Okay, that wasn't an, I don't think I didn't hear that as an action item, just a sense of requested staff for more information. Keep this obviously something we want to accomplish in that work plan. And
like financial gypsies.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you? Do you think that's reasonable?
If we don't have to do the usual one, probably.
Well, you could update us in May, and if May you say you need more time, that way we keep it on our motions calendar so we don't lose track of it. All right, any further discussion on that before we move to the Cluster 2 discussion at Attachment E, page 32? Hearing none. And again, that's just so everybody's listening in. That was not considered to be an action item. So we have resolved that, at least move forward in that discussion, and now we're moving to Attachment E at page 32, the Cluster 2 analysis. James is back.
So there's been, on the work plan, has been there's a lot of discussion, and the work plan Cluster 2 has been residing there for a while. So staff took a look at sort of a first pass of trying to figure out exactly what the ask was. I think there's still some question about what the ask from this body is. As stated earlier, the district council approved the updated WAFM in January, and on this list of plan was to go back and look at Cluster 2. Although review of small court adjustment BLS was discussed, there's still a lot of questions about whether some or all of Cluster 2 is being adequately looked at. It's been brought up whether or not the smaller courts in Cluster 2 are adequately addressed. Some people have asked whether some of the smaller courts look more like Cluster 1, and there's been a discussion. So on a first pass, what we did is we looked at just kind of a very high-level view of all the clusters we've looked at and where Cluster 2 fit in there. As one of the bigger clusters, as an intellectual exercise and not a suggestion necessarily, we looked at what it would look like to break them apart and if those two pieces were distinct. If really there were two groups kind of masking as one, just again, as an intellectual exercise, not as a suggestion from staff at this point. In doing that, you have in front of you, just using some clustering statistical math, we used a bunch of different ideas on what that might look like, as there is a lot of variability in those Cluster 2 courts. But we also did this with the idea that there are the small court adjustments that are obviously in RAS and that are in WAFM that have been discussed ad nauseum in the past. But in going through this, you know, it begs a lot of questions of exactly what those at the table think we might be missing. And so one of the questions that staff continues to have is there something in Cluster 2 that you don't feel like we're capturing? Is there a workload factor or something unique to some of those courts that you feel like we're not capturing? And if so, that's one discussion to have. Anything that actually looks at the clusters themselves is not necessarily for this body. It would be something that would have to go to WAC, and so that's a much bigger discussion. But this particular report was just an intellectual exercise to see if these two groupings within Cluster 2 led to more discussion of those different courts. So I'll leave it there for now, but we can dig down deeper if there are specific questions. But the main thing is just, is there something we're still missing in those clusters, that you would like us to go back and look at in more detail?
So looking at Table 3, you came up using this methodology. You split Cluster 2 into 2A and 2B now. is that a suggestion to group them in that way? Or
again, I think that we were still at a loss for not having the specifics of where people thought we might be missing the boat as far as if there's some way we're not capturing in Cluster 2 currently, especially with some of the smaller ports. So one idea was maybe since this is the biggest cluster, maybe there's something fundamentally different between the smaller Cluster 2 and the larger Cluster 2. So looking at sort of some cluster modeling by looking at the different variables on the left-hand side, whether it was judicial positions, FTE population, et cetera, is how would it break out if we did that? And is there something that you can look at this and say, well, absolutely, these two groupings show that the ones on 2A and 2B are fundamentally different, and we should have that discussion about whether that makes sense, or is this arbitrary? And that leads us back to what is it that we're missing if we still feel like there's something not being captured to fully show the workload in the cluster two ports.
I think what we saw earlier was that the cluster two has the biggest range in terms of number of judicial positions and population and whatnot. And so I think the question we were asked in the fall was, does WAFM and or the RAS model adequately capture the needs in cluster two? And in trying to answer that question, we started to think of cluster two as maybe potentially having two components to it. Then we started looking at the fit issue and saying, well, if we split the clusters, do the models still fit the larger ports in cluster two and our problem is really with the smaller ones? Or is this not the approach that we should be taking? And do we need to come at it from a different perspective? So I think this is meant to be sort of a look at the demographics of cluster two, figure out if there's just something inherent in the range of sizes is causing our problem.
Sure.
Final. This one's kind of a puzzle. So I kind of looked at the numbers greater than 10 and then 5 and under, right? I mean, yeah, okay. And if you look at the greater than 10, I'm looking at on page 34, in minor circles, but you can't do this like I can. So El Dorado, Humble, King, Madera, Mendocino, Napa, Nevada, that's it.
And when you say the number than 10, you're looking at column 2, the authorized judicial need?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's interesting is that the total RAS need is a pretty good range until you get to Nevada. And I don't understand that. Are they one that has more judges than what the judicial needs assessment indicates?
Slightly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder rather than, well, authorized judicial, would that be, I wonder if we should plug in to see if there's any kind of new finding if you put in based on the authorized judicial need rather than the authorized position, you know, the judicial
yeah.
need.
And that one's just to the right.
Oh, I see. So that explains
it. Is, yeah, it is.
So that actually explains it. Because look at the numbers. So, again, if you look at El Dorado, Humboldt, King, Madera, Mendocino, Napa, and Nevada, those are the ones that are over 5 but less than 10, right? The numbers are all pretty close till you get there. So really, maybe authorized judicial need is a better factor. Because RAS is about staff. We need to remember that. RAS is about staff, not just.
In that cluster, in Table 3, you use authorized judicial positions in coming up
you
from
do.
2A to 2B, not judicial need.
You know, I ran it, but there were a bunch of other things not on this page. It was kind of an iterative process. And
yeah.
I will say that what you will see is when you change any of these things, if you look at the bottom, it's kind of a compilation of a lot of the variables.
Right.
If you change these things, you get the one court that will jump back and forth, sometimes two courts that jump back and forth because of exactly what you're saying. But they typically stay roughly similar with that one court jumping back and forth. I will say the tough part for staff and thinking more broadly, is as you start to look just within cluster twos, you know, it quickly begs the question of, well, then you get some of the courts that are on the lower end that some might make some argument are closer to one, or that
yeah.
some on the top are closer to three. So, every, you know, it's hard to look at this in a vacuum, but
well,
this was the first step.
Yeah, I kind of threw the less five and below with one and the over five up to 14 into three, and that's kind of where they fit. Except for that one, and now I see it, it's probably closer to upright judicial need.
Rebecca?
So I was going to ask, if you were to lay that out in some kind of a chart, is there a pretty clear, this is more acting like cluster one, this is acting more like cluster three, or is that something you could show us or come back with?
I think the trick is, you know, if we're looking purely statistically, then the question begs, you know, you start looking at you know, it gets blown up into all the different clusters and all that, then that's a much bigger conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you look specifically in cluster two,
mm-hmm.
it depends on what you look at. It depends on these things, and you can mm-hmm. see that they stay pretty much the same, but you'll have that one court jump. But if you really look at a broader picture of one and three and all of that, then it's a different picture. And I think we all have an idea based on experience of, well, you know, the two judge courts are somewhat unique, the
mm-hmm.
under five or under 10, but that's somewhat arbitrary
mm-hmm.
to how it kind of feels or how you think. If you just do it purely by the statistics, it's going to change depending on what the inputs are and what you're trying to compare, if that makes sense. The other thing I'll throw out that I forgot to mention on the onset is in looking at this, we went back and looked at the small court adjustments and realized that at this point, the only thing that changes by the clusters is the OE&E, and the other things would then be stuff that would go to WAC and be a much bigger discussion of clusters. So even the idea of breaking out cluster two into two parts or anything else wouldn't be something that we can necessarily do, but the OE&E is the one thing we would have control over. And as a refresher right now, cluster ones have one OE&E number based on that average. Cluster two through four have an OE&E number based on that average.
So we could come back and show that group of courts and recalculate the OE&E for cluster one plus the smallest
And actually, when I got asked about this, that was really what I didn't fully understand is how small, where the small court adjustment line was. And if it's just at cluster one courts, which are the two judge courts, that it may need to creep up a little bit to other size courts to see. So that would be one of the things that would be of interest to me to kind of look at what that means and to discuss whether or not those adjustments are justified for those smaller courts or not.
In the compilation of all variables, did you give all of the factors the same weight? I'm not sure population fits here.
If it was just a way to take them all, there would be no way for me to come up. It would be arbitrary to say one gets more weight than the other.
Well,
it was just an idea if we
sure
throw them all in there.
Population fits at all. We don't
sure
really use that in
field FTEs does either.
Yeah, I don't think field FTEs does either. I think that
yeah,
you're
that's completely
it could
manageable.
Be based on a lot, yeah. Well, and it could be you can't recruit.
It could be a lot of things.
You can't recruit.
So maybe that would help refine some of your results if you dropped out
population
and filled FTE.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm just trying to, again, I try to figure out what we want to accomplish at the end of the day with this being under work plan. And I don't hear anybody saying, and as a matter of fact, I would be against redefining the clusters, starting down that path again. The question strikes me more of, are there courts that are at the fringes of cluster two that would either then fall into one or move up to three, and you're going to give us the information to examine that. I don't hear anybody saying.
But then you wouldn't be able to make that determination, though. You would have to go to WAC and say, we'd like you to review.
Okay.
WAC establishes the clusters.
I think
we're not going to change the clusters. Mm-hmm. But WAC and WAC establishes also who's in the clusters?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will say that the looking at it currently, again, there are some bit of clear from the past, clear definitions of what falls into cluster one and what falls into cluster three. And there isn't anything in this preliminary review that would provide overwhelming evidence that we missed the boat and somebody needs to be one or somebody needs to be three. I think there's nothing to suggest that without going back to the question of clusters altogether, which, again, is not our purview.
I think so. If there's adjustments that were applied to cluster one, though, that could blend over into cluster two and fix some of this, maybe the outlier. I think that would be an interesting aspect.
All we need would be the one thing that we could come back and show a difference in.
Mike Roddy?
The risk of really muddying the waters, there is no magic to the clusters. They were made up a number of years ago in the context, they were made up in the context of dealing with court security funding. We were trying to come up with ways to determine, you know, groups of courts that we could comparatively evaluate things in. So WAC inherited that work and has stayed with it ever since. But that was where this whole cluster thing started. And I know because I was in the room at that time.
That's kind of my thought is you were saying we're not going to change the clusters, but if you see a kind of consistency of a disparity within this, what would prevent creating, redefining the clusters? Because what struck me is that within cluster two, you have the widest disparity of all the clusters within it. So is it time to revisit that and perhaps create a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Don't know. That's a, I know it's not up to us, but it's kind of the
see, back in the day, there was this kind of discussion of how many clusters should we have? Because arguably, LA could be their own cluster because they're so comparatively larger than anybody else in that cluster.
Second.
Well, I would have no one to fight with.
You're fighting yourself. That would be fun to watch. I'm just trying to indicate that there was no solid methodology. The courts tended to break out into these groups, and it was designed to have a comparative group, but you could have 8 clusters for the sake of argument. So I think if we get to that point, we could make those kind of recommendations. There's nothing magic about it. It just is what WAC inherited.
And it was based on AJP, and that has moved.
Like I say, it was probably done back in 2003 or 4 or something like that. Yeah.
So the influx of new judgeships has changed the
and the funding methodology around the authorized judicial positions has changed with WAFA.
Rebecca,
there's a lot of reasons to look at it.
I think there's one of two ways to go. Either we have unresearched data that we need to have done and bring back for a clear recommendation in a direction, or two, we actually recommend to WAC to take a look at the clusters themselves.
Sherry?
I'd like to ask Judge, what did you have in mind? Because this is really something that you had requested. So I think before we go down a rabbit hole with a lot of more review, what were you hoping to look at?
So, well, I swore I wasn't going to say this, these letters at this meeting, but but as far as those courts in Cluster 2 that are more rural, whether or not there was either a position the small court adjustments, whether or not they should creep into Cluster 2 or not even clusters, and those like-size type of things, or it did have to do with, I'll say the letters, even though the BLS part of it in regards to the fact that sometimes for more rural counties, there are other costs associated with providing service. And so that whether or not there should be some kind of adjustment for ruralness, or whether or not in looking at those courts that are, I meant to have a clear statement of all of this before. So it really is looking at whether or not, and honestly, it's not as critical. If we are able to increase the discretionary funds that go to all courts, then those courts at the fringes are not as necessary. But to the extent that we say cluster one courts, those two judge courts deserve are the first ones we're going to look at 100% funding. Whether or not there are things about cluster two courts that would then change the priority of any increases in their sort of walking allotment. So whether or not there are other things we should look at as far as the ruralness or population size, or to be able to do the job they need to do. And so I think starting with the small court adjustments of how that might impact those courts in Cluster 2, and looking at maybe all of them in Cluster 2, saying, and frankly, you see a breaking point, I think, looking at, well, wait a minute, those places with 10 judges don't need that because, but that we just need to look kind of creeping up at the 3-judge courts, the 4, kind of 5, to say, are some of those exceptions that we accepted so easily for 2-judge courts, do those things still hold? And what would they look like if we were to grant those? What would be the cost associated with doing those things? And the the hard part is that when you're looking at those rural courts in California that have a lower BLS, there are just other costs that go along with living in a rural community that don't get captured by the BLS. And so are there other ways to look at it that we're not, talking about? The other part that I did ask about before is that we do know that for those courts, I'm going to say this wrong, Leah, for those that have less than 10 judges, is that the ones that the 0.78?
Fewer than 50 employees.
So fewer than 50 employees, that then you don't use their actual BLS number. There's a calculation that's done, and they all use 0.78 as their BLS factor. And so looking at that, looking at that portion of whether or not that's right to do, and if it is right to do, whether that should be adjusted in some other way.
So if that's the case, I have 2 things that I would appreciate being looked at. One is using the total RAS need at 50 employees or below, applying what difference would it make to those courts if their BLS was, is it automatically applied regardless of what cluster you're in, or only cluster 1 right now? Do you know?
50 FTE adjustment. There are a few in cluster 2.
There are, so do you apply it there too?
Yeah.
Oh, well then it's already applied then.
Right, but my question is that however it was calculated, whenever it was calculated, is there a reason to look at the factors in it and recalculate it?
Well, it's a federal calculation. The 50, isn't that a federal calculation?
Are you talking about BLS?
It was chosen because it matched, right.
That's what the federal
says. Right, but I guess, and I'm maybe, but the calculation to get to 0.78 is done. Is the federal calculation?
No, it's an output of the adjusted salaries. Not that it's not like we use 7-8. It just ends up being that that's what that is.
Okay.
As opposed to pitching 7-8. Yeah, it's a mathematical result. Not that we're using 7-8. It's that we do math on salaries that are adjusted.
So the number could change upward or downward based on?
It's got a relationship to what the salaries are.
Right, and I think it's the way it's been explained is there's pretty complete analysis that's done to all of the salaries within the particular area to reach that. I don't know if it's possible to go even deeper into the particular locality to get a more accurate number, but the way that Lee has explained it to us previously, you do get a pretty accurate sense of what the prevailing salary is in the area.
So the other piece of that really was that some of those counties do have state employees, but since it's the number that we've chosen is the 50% number, that there is that sort of disparity in those things. So whether or not having a calculation of less than 50% for some of those cluster 2 courts, or maybe not, is those are the things that I wanted to have looked at, is that impact of the state employee adjustments that are made in larger courts, larger counties, how that could be.
Mike, did you have a comment? I thought I saw your hand up. Roddy? Sherry?
So I have 2 things. So the first one was applying the 50 employees. It sounds like we do that already regardless of which cluster. Yes. The second one was it does look like the 5 and below are very close to the cluster 1. So I don't know if you could do a comparison there to see what the standard deviation would be when you're comparing those two, because if you look at the RAS need and the authorized judicial need, they're pretty close.
So I have a question, and I don't mean to...
what's the result?
Well, I guess when we put this on the work plan, when we were going through all of our different decision-making, my understanding was that we decided on BLS, and BLS was not necessarily the issue, that the cluster 2 was showing behavior that was not consistent from court to court to court. And so I that's what I thought we were looking for, is... not necessarily digging in and recalculating BLS again, because my understanding is that that is done, but rather, is there some behavior like operating costs or rural, situation or something else that either an adjustment could be made that extends to those courts, or that a new adjustment might need to be introduced to address those kind of anomalies? But that's what I thought we were looking for, and maybe I'm wrong.
Mike Roddy?
The clusters are based on judicial positions. RAS and WAFM are based on filings. There's a disconnect. It may change if we were to array the courts by workload. You might find cluster 2 courts should be in 1, cluster 3, 4 courts should be in 3. If workload is the driver,
yeah.
Workload needs to be the first column we're looking at, not judicial need.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, yeah, that's
whether, we like it or not, we could divorce the two.
Yep.
Whack, I mean.
I'll just say one of the models here looked at filings.
Right.
And I will say, again, the tough part is it does beg the question. You can't, if we're having a discussion, you can't look at cluster 2 in and of itself, because in my sort of first pass, there is nothing to suggest that, you know, you can always pick that there's a court that is close to the next court, the next one up or down, but without looking at the totality of all of them, and again, that's something that right now we only have control over OED, or, as I believe one of the co-chairs mentioned, sending it to WAC for future.
But I think, and I am somewhat agreeing with you, that we need to look at the totality of this. You may find you have to still have the 4 clusters or 5 clusters, but the workload may array itself in such a way as people are going to move. Then we can look at the effect of that.
Look at FTE need. Cluster 3 has a court with 489. Cluster 4 has one with 294. That's proving your point, right?
And if staffing is driven by workload.
Right.
So the question is, do we need to get information to then make a recommendation back to WAC, or do we just pitch it to WAC, or do we say instead it's not our function, nor can we change the clusters, but are there adjustment factors we can apply within the clusters to account for that? Because we can't change right now. We can't change it.
So my feeling is that the adjustments really have to do with the difference in workload kinds of things, and that we're looking at that more precisely, and then maybe kicking back to WAC that, you know, is this really how we want to define things always? But I think, you know, I think the funding going along with the workload makes more sense, and not necessarily funding by cluster for that matter.
The clusters are at least 10 years old,
yeah,
probably longer.
Why don't we just ask WAC to take a look at it?
Look at clusters.
I think we're in a position to give them a recommendation.
Yeah.
Right. Because they inherited the clusters. They really didn't do any affirmative work to create them. They just inherited them, and then they've used them ever since.
So is it your suggestion we do that now, or that we get some information to support
information.
It?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So we get the information to support it. We keep it on the agenda for the next meeting and meeting after to then make, so we can then formalize a motion, for lack of a better term, back to WAC as a rationalization for our request that they reconsider the cluster determination.
And I don't think that WAC's going to have too much of a position on the matter, because they really don't use the clusters for anything other than organizing themselves.
Okay. So what information do we need then, or have we already defined it, as far as to send it back to WAC to rationalize our request to them? You're right. We can't just send it to them and say, you mess with it, unless we give them our rationale as to why we think it should be messed with.
Well,
if our rationale is workload,
yeah,
then
to analyze it by workload.
All right, analyze it by workload. And get that.
Yeah. So is that a motion, Mike?
That's a motion.
Second.
Hold on. Make the find the motion that we...
That staff return to us with... Go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering, do we need to return with anything? Can't you just refer it to WAC to say, look at clusters based on a workload model?
I think just as a wrap-up.
Memo and
service the rest.
I think WAC is going to get there much more quickly if we have a recommendation based on our analysis of workload and funding, that they don't understand what we're doing. If we just say, look at it, they're going to start all over just like we did, going, we don't know what to do with this.
Can I clarify then, is it just to look at the clusters based on filings,
FTE,
workload, FTE, yeah, the same way we would look at it in RAS and WAFM?
Yeah.
And if so, is it also to keep
the
current number of them or look at more?
I think there's two dimensions.
Yeah.
First is filings, but also the composition of filings. Because 200,000 is not 200,000. One could be heavily weighted, say, criminal. Another could be heavily weighted to traffic. I think to the extent we have the next level, that might be helpful in our analysis. But fundamentally, yes.
RAS FTE would be that.
Yeah.
So it comes back to us with a recommendation as to what we're going to say to WAC. Rather than just pitch it to WAC.
And you may see a clear breakpoint, so you might say it makes sense to go to 5 because you're going to see sometimes when you do formulas, it's clear. So I'll leave your mind wide open because I'll bet you'll come up with an idea. Except I don't want to be a cluster. Well, maybe I
should.
We can send it now, right?
So the thought is at the front of the table, just to bring everybody in, why don't we just send it now? It seems like we've defined it. We've come up with what it needs to be. Why don't we just send it to them? And then obviously a report would come back to all of us as to what we're sending to them.
Yeah. And so it would stay on our work plan until we got a final report.
Tanya?
I think we need to understand that since they already have their work plan, this may not be a part of their work plan for a while.
I think that's why we've put it on ours.
Ironically, the cluster issue should be here. It should be part of TICVAC because that's where it has impact and import. How it ended up with WAC, I think, is just a historical anomaly.
Yeah, although we use it for all those ratios.
Yeah.
So.
But to the extent that courts need to be within their proper grouping, that's a good thing.
Right.
We've always said we were going to be open to adjusting the models. Things change.
Yeah.
This hasn't been updated since 2004.
Well, this is a change once it's ultimately made. So there's got to be plenty of time to plan for it and implement. So we're going to really have to work through this carefully. So I think we need more information to do that.
I think we can get it put it on this year's annual agenda.
So we're doing a motion
to refer the cluster issue to WAC.
And keep it on our agenda as well. Everybody, so there, is there a motion to refer the cluster, how do I phrase it?
For WAC to evaluate carpool clusters based on workload. No, we're going straight to WAC.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I guess the bottom line is, why does it need to come back to us to decide? We've already decided what we want them to do.
Because I think I would like to see it come back because
just for closure.
We need to give them an affirmative recommendation based on something other than we think it's a good idea. Take a look at it. If we can arrive at where to draw those lines based on these new considerations, then WAC has a roadmap. They're going to understand what we did and why. If we just say, we want you guys to look at this, they're going to say, for what reason? What are we supposed to do with it?
Sherry, did you have a comment?
I think the reason it needs to come back is there may be fiscal impact.
Okay.
That's what's going to come here because Cluster 1 may now be significantly bigger than it is now, and with all of the small court funding things,
okay,
it might cost more money. So I think we need to look at it from a budgetary standpoint on whether or not we'd recommend it and where the lines might be and that kind of thing. So I think there's value in having us review it.
Okay. So it seems, I don't want to speak, but it appears that the sentiment in the room is we don't send it to WAC quite yet.
No, because we may decide
is there a motion as to what we want to bring back?
I would move that staff prepare the necessary background materials to evaluate clusters 1 through 4 based on workload and other RAS factors that had come back to this committee for us to consider what recommendation, if any, to make to WAC with respect to changes in the cluster methodology.
And you want us to bring 4 hypotheticals, run all of WAC based upon the new clusters so we can see if there's a funding impact?
Right. You said one of the funding impacts, though.
Well, because
right.
with the...
There's a fiscal impact. We've got to know about it.
If it grows or gets smaller. I mean,
I think, in addition, I think we have an item there that says any additional funding, the first priority will be to get the Cluster 1 courts to 100%. Or one of the priorities would be. That priority could be impacted by a larger cluster with more courts, for example. We ought to at least know that.
And if you look at the courts that are five judges or less, or look at their average filings, there would be three to five of those courts that could fall into Cluster 1, and then would have at least currently set it out to bring them to 100%.
So you want to come back as an emeritus member at the next discussion?
And that would take care of part of the BOS issue.
Okay. So that's the motion. Is second?
I did second it
okay.
already.
Moved and seconded. Does anybody not understand the motion, including staff? Any opposition to the motion? Approved. Unanimous. All right. Finally, attachment F, special circumstances case funding at page 35. Leah?
Yeah, that's
okay.
And I just want to spend a minute, if anything for myself, just to define a couple of terms because I think they can be somewhat confusing. But when we talk about special circumstances cases, the references to cases that fall under the definition of specified in Penal Code 190.2. And so those are special circumstances cases that may or may not be a capital or death penalty case. And the reason I say that is in the discussion we had at the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee about the issue, it was brought up that there are some counties that don't charge capital cases. And so the preference was to consider the workload of special circumstances cases, not just specifically capital cases. The other term I want to clarify is in a reference was shorthandedly called the Extraordinary Homicide Fund, and that is not to suggest that extraordinary modifies the word homicide. The extraordinary means out of the normal cost for homicide cases. And so in some of our earlier discussions when we were talking about it, people thought, oh, are we talking about homicides that are above the norm, and that's not the way that we're using the term. But there's a memo contained on page 35, starting on page 35. This was an issue that had originally been referred to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee a few years ago, and the suggestion at the time was to create a case way to measure the workload of special circumstances cases. And we had done, as part of the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, a subcommittee was established and studied the workload. They looked at the types of work that were created when these cases were processed. And two main findings kind of came to bear. One was that when these cases happen, approximately one out of every 27,000 cases is a special circumstances or death penalty, special circumstances case. And so they happen relatively infrequently, yet when they happen, they do incur large costs. And the concern ultimately of the group and the reason why the subcommittee did not end up making a recommendation to establish a case weight for these cases was that for smaller jurisdictions in particular, if you were to create a special weight for these cases, you may not get sufficient funding to pay for those immediate costs that come from hearing that workload, costs such as having a dedicated court reporter for the calendar or creating the transcript. And what smaller courts in particular might need would be some source of immediate funding to pay for those cases. And in the course of the discussion, some courts raised that it may not only be the smallest courts that require that supplementary funding, but that other courts may also benefit from some additional source of funding that would help pay for those immediate costs that come with the homicide. There's a fund that the judicial branch administers called the Extraordinary Homicide Fund. It's approximately $272,000 per year, and currently it's open to all courts under 300,000 in population. And there's a request form that courts can fill out and submit to get reimbursed for those costs. And what we found in doing some looking at the use of that fund is that over the past 5 or 6 years, the fund has really been lightly used. There's a table on page 42 of the packet that shows that last year only one court submitted a request for reimbursement. That request was $22,427. And the years before that, the requests were also relatively light, even though in all the jurisdictions that qualify, and those qualifying jurisdictions have the blue mark in the population column, all those jurisdictions had homicide cases. They just haven't come to this fund for reimbursement. So the original reason that this was on the work plan was the committee, we had thought that the committee might be recommending that we expand the fund and expand the qualifying criteria so that more courts could utilize it. But on looking at the data, it may be that FMS wishes to go a different course, and that might be to just better utilize the fund or get information out about the fund. It seems that with so much turnover, particularly on the CEO side, that maybe courts aren't aware that this fund exists. And that might be a first step before thinking about expansion.
So one thought would be we have those courts that are eligible for the fund, we just reach out to them formally and provide them notification of the fund and the criteria for the fund, and then step back and see what happens. And if they make requests of the fund, we can decide whether or not we need to evaluate the amount, or if they leave the fund alone, what, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Thoughts?
I agree.
It's a pretty labor-intensive process. You'll see I have, and in my past life, I used it a lot.
What do you have to do?
There's a cap. There's a threshold you have to make based on the tax basis in the county, property tax basis. So whatever that threshold is, you have, it's expenses that are in excess of that amount. So you really have to have a relationship with your custodial group, your sheriff's department, because everybody has to start tracking the money. And once you hit that threshold, then all of that money above that qualifies. So it's, you know, depending on whether the relationship is good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, everybody's tracking the money. So it's, you know, the sheriff with the custodial issue.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So is your thought people don't put into it, not because they don't know about it, but because it's too labor-intensive to put in for it?
It's that and the fact that, I mean, I've had the sheriff tell me before, I'm not going to do it. Because 1 year I had 9 homicides in the pipeline, and once you have one qualifying, then, you know, it's like, whew, the more the merrier. Sorry for that expression, but from that perspective, it's good.
So, outside of the sheriff's cost, would something like hiring a court reporter for the transcript, would that qualify and not require that sort of level of scrutiny on the sheriff's side?
Not on the sheriff's side.
Right.
It's going to be on the court side. So once you hit the threshold, then all of the expenses can be turned in.
So
if you're going to have, like, for instance, then under the code, you can, either the reporter can hire, you know, apply for the cost, 50% of the cost of a reporter in order to hire a scoper and all those associated for having daily transcripts. And all those costs go in.
Judge Cope, did you have a comment?
Well, actually, kind of along with it. This issue came up, has been on the agenda because of not a special circumstances cases, but death penalty cases. I've tried special circumstances cases. I've never tried a death penalty case. They are very different things. And they don't become death penalty cases until the DA files their notice that it's a death penalty case. And that's why that's part of the reason why they're so hard to count. Because they may file that later in the case, and you've already done the work on there. But I don't think the dailies are required until they do that either.
Correct.
And it's done
And so a special circumstance case in and of itself is not much different than any other homicide case. You can try those in a week. And as a matter of course, you can. And a homicide case, when you define what they're looking at for these, can even include a misdemeanor. That's just, a homicide can be anything from a misdemeanor manslaughter all the way up to a death penalty.
Right.
And so there's a, what we were asking to look at from the very beginning was not any of those except death penalty cases, because those typically, not even the extraordinary death penalty case, will take 3 months and will require a daily transcript, which requires two reporters, because one's got to be in the courtroom while the other one's preparing the transcript. And the cost and the labor involved in a death penalty case is just completely different than any other homicide case. And so that's why it was referred to WAC, because we thought it should be counted separately. They returned and said, nope, can't really do that because, you know, we're looking at statistics. And statistically, this is nothing more than a hiccup.
Right.
And so if it's not, then it's not. And as for the Extraordinary Homicide Fund, I'm not sure that's anything for us to get involved in. It's there, it's available, and it's up to courts to decide whether it's worth the effort to go after those funds or not, seems to me.
I'm somewhat confused, and I haven't dealt with this issue since Scott Peterson, because it goes how far back. Because in that case, we were able to get both Stanislaus and San Mateo funds for that case, and they're clearly more than 300,000 people. And the code sections in here specifically indicate that costs incurred by the county do not include the cost paid for Superior Court operations. I think there's a process within the branch to deal with court costs that is not this specific county fund. I can see where the sheriff wouldn't want to do that. But I know that there have been courts that have gotten money for court operations expenses, like reporters and stuff like that. But it doesn't seem that this is the same process. Am I missing something, Z?
No, as you're thinking about it, I'm reading the code. It talks about county costs.
Right.
I took that, Mike, to mean that operations was that you couldn't pay for your existing staff, like on 7A, but that you had to hire a reporter or some or pay for security if it's not part of your normal operations.
Yeah.
That was
right. There's been a process by which courts could get
money.
Right, because I know courts that have done that.
573? Is that what you're looking at?
I'm sure. You know, I'm.
I think
your court reimbursed Santa Clara Court, right? It wasn't from a.
They got some funds.
San Mateo, right.
You didn't get any special money for it.
No, we went out and got special money.
Well, we did, but then we transferred the case. So
this used to be easier to utilize.
I was just saying, I think it's changed since when
the other
place.
It was really a simple.
Well, what this tells me, not to cut the discussion off, but I think we need to evaluate. There's special circumstances case funding and there's death penalty cases. Not every special circumstance case is a death penalty case. And so I think, one, we need some clarification if that's a factor. But what does the special circumstance case funding need to continue? Is it utilized?
It's not a special circumstance.
It's homicide.
Right. So it said that the item on our agenda is special circumstances case funding.
I agree with Judge Cope. I mean, we asked and answered this question in WAC. So if it's not a workload factor, why should it be an allocation or a WAF factor?
Take it off the work plan?
That's what I would move.
It's really an education issue.
Okay.
I think it's an education issue that we could get our grand poobah here to put out.
But I was just going to suggest that maybe staff could just send the reminder because
there has
been a change.
Yeah.
Okay, so the suggestion for staff is send a change out to those counties that are impacted and could benefit from special circumstances case funding notifying. Well, okay, but I'm looking at the agenda item. So the agenda item says special circumstances case funding. Okay, so evaluate extraordinary homicide case funding. So move to amend the work plan item. Item 6 is evaluate extraordinary homicide case funding. And what our decision is to take it off of our work plan as extraordinary homicide case funding, but request staff notify counties of the availability and the factors for extraordinary homicide case funding.
Yep.
Done. I don't, do we need a motion on that?
It's on the work plan, so
yeah.
I think we should at least close it out.
Why don't we just declare victory if they would check this one out?
So Mr. Planet has made the motion. It's been seconded by Ms. Fleming.
Oh.
But based upon, I just showed, because she just raised her hands when.
I was actually showing touchdown, but go ahead.
So you second his motion?
Yes.
Any further discussion on the motion? Any opposition? The motion, therefore, that the work plan item of evaluating certain homicide case funding is removed from our work plan with a request to staff to notify counties of the availability of the extraordinary homicide case funding. All right. Well.
We need to move those.
Yeah, that's what we're about to do. Okay.
So.
So.
There was some discussion earlier. Staff will be coming back in May with an allocation recommendation, and so will we be bringing back allocating the $75 million via WAP?
Yes. So, but
no
I want
carve-outs or just okay.
Right.
But would it be considering that? Would it consider that half of that is, or are we going to understand that the 47.8 effectively addresses the equity issue and the $75 million represents step two already contemplated as part of WAFM? So it's not per the letter of the law, the now new money that then is subject to half being the underfunded courts and the remainder being spread to all. It's a nuance on that, so it's not.
That's not what the policy says, though.
Do we want, is that part of the discussion?
Right, so the way we would do it on the existing policy is to allocate the 47.8, recognize the 75, create a new average, and then bring the courts below the new average.
With the 75.
With the 75 to the...
And I'm saying is that I think that contemplated in the budget, we would probably want to discuss with how the budget proposers did it, that step one has already been dealing with the equity. Did the 75 become the distributed to all courts step?
But we would start with cluster one still, no matter what,
right.
Correct?
We would have to go back to council to amend the WAFM policy there.
Or it could be just an
See, I think I know where he's coming from.
I know what
from.
He's saying,
right.
Sure.
Because the two-part process didn't envision
the governor being just a bunch.
Right. So then the question is, because let's put that aside for a second. Originally, we said any new money, 50% goes to the underfunded courts. Does the $47 million satisfy the 50%, or do we do the 50% off the 75?
Do we do equity twice?
That's what he's asking.
Yeah, so let's assume the 47 was not there. If that didn't happen, we'd just be looking at the 75, and we'd say we'd distribute it pursuant to the new funding methodology, and we'd address those. So why aren't we doing that anyways? Because we've already recognized 47.8 doesn't get us there, right?
It's going to create a new floor.
So once we get the new numbers in, can we ignore that first step? I don't think we can.
I think that this body could say, notwithstanding what you did, I think it is part of a conversation. Because I don't know if the Department of Finance might have necessarily envisioned that we did two efforts on an equity funding approach.
You think that would, Sherry, go ahead.
What does it raise it up to? What does it raise the average to? Has anyone calculated that?
47.
$75 million. So you've added the $47 million. Now this morning already agreed that the 11.9 will continue to go to those, so that they're up to 78, right? So when you add the $75 million, what does that 78% become?
It brings a new average funding level of 80.8%.
That's the 47.
That's the 47.8. So it's 80.8%.
With that, but then you add 75.
So that 80.8 becomes the new base. And then
is 80.8 with the 75?
No,
with the 47.8,
right.
80.8,
right.
And then from there, you'd be taking the first 37.5 million and 75.
Mike Roddy?
Setting aside the 47, trying to distill the question, do we take $37.5 million and give it to the underfunded courts first before then allocating the remaining $37.5 million?
Or anything that's left over from the first 37.5, you're right. That's our, right.
So it's at that point, it's 47 plus 37.
So what does that do to our advocacy message?
And I think that that's worthy of discussing. So it's to the executive office and talk about what they understand and think to be the approach.
I am curious then, what it raises it up to, though.
Right. So we would like we would like that discussion to continue.
To circle back.
Right. At our next meeting, as far as what. We surely don't want to take any action that's going to impair that advocacy or detract from the what we all consider right now to be a very advantageous salad.
Ken, it's a legitimate question, and I continue to take to heart the rest of that language in the proposal about consistent with recommendations from the Commission on the Futures Commission.
Right.
So how does that comport with taking $37.5 million off of that $75 million? And I mean, I don't know. I'd like to see where all this shakes
out. Right. So after the May, our next meeting is after the May revise, so we'd like an update from staff about that exact issue, about what's the recommendation concerning the 75. Sherry, did you have a comment?
Well, it doesn't leave much time. In fact, we really won't have information for the council by the time it comes here and goes to trial court budget. Then it's got to be approved by the council to be for the allocation. Do we need to do something differently, right? I mean, when do you need to know how the 75 is going to be allocated? Wouldn't it be July?
Yeah, we need to approve it May 31st.
Yeah.
May 31st for us.
For
take back.
Yeah. So we might need to move up our meeting.
Well, we might need, for this specific item, we might need to have a telephonic meeting, a conference call, right, as soon as available, because I don't think we could reach, just for that, I think the discussion is going to be pretty precise once we know. So this is clearly in flux, but something that we would like an immediate update on when, as soon as practicable, and then I'll work with staff. Rebecca and I will work with staff, and we'll get a request out to all of you about a telephonic meeting so we can continue the discussion on this item.
And Judge Conklin, it seems to me that as Blocko and others are talking to the Department of Finance about what their expectation was, that should be
absolutely
a display of it. Because if they felt that the first chunk of money specifically addressing the under-averaged court took care of the step one, we need to know that versus...
Absolutely, I agree. Kim, did you have a comment?
I did. I'm just trying to go back to our policy. So when we were coming up with what do we do with new money, it was new money with no strings. New money that was completely discretionary, right?
Right.
So we could look at the 47 as it is not as discretionary. I mean, we're being directed to spend it on
right.
Our own court. So then the 75 should fall under that policy of the up to 50% for the loan. Unless DOF had a different
right.
thought,
right.
then we need to know that.
So our concern is, and I want to be very careful the way I state this, but what we want to know what other interests might come into play about impacting. We don't want to be disingenuous, and we also don't want to be unappreciative of the money. So is there thoughts about whether or not that 75, I think my initial thought was, yeah, that 75 should still go for that purpose, but I'm not sure if that's what the people that are proposing the 75.
We want to make sure
right.
we understand the intent.
Exactly.
There was that one just line in there about consistent with the Futures Commission, too.
And outcome measures.
The outcome, those are the things I come back to. But if we can show that now with those money
right, no,
we
I mean,
can accomplish
can we talk about we Waffle and a method that is to be developed by the trial courts and the budget advisory committee to do so?
Okay, so getting back to our task at hand today and our work plan, looking at the 2018-2019 work plan, item 2 and item 7, I would propose that we defer those to 2019-2020 work plan. I think we've got enough work ahead of us. But that's just, and Rebecca and I consulted about that. I don't want me to speak for her, but our thought is let's be reasonable about what we can accomplish, and if other tasks can be appropriately deferred to the next year, let's do that. So we would defer the discussions of new judgeship staffing complement funding when necessary and impact of JCC and other provided services to the 2019-2020 work plan. I think there needs to be a motion for that.
So I'll make
that
motion. And I'll second it.
All right, made by Planet, seconded by Maragonda. Any further discussion on that? Any opposition? Those items are therefore moved to the 2019-2020 work plan.
Do we ever do number 11?
Track technology funding streams as an annual update.
Quarterly.
But I have a question on the annual updates for 10 and 11.
6 is removed from our work plan.
Has anyone ever reported on number 11 to anyone's recollection?
I think we had an update from the JCTC, from Judge Blau maybe, probably over a year ago as to the progress.
Well, we can ask that.
But I think that's the last. Maybe what we could do is decide, you know, given that you guys have, like, certain crunches of time of workload, maybe we can pick one or two times a year that we can schedule those, like, the same month every year to have updates on those.
And we don't even need a quarterly for sure.
No, I was thinking twice a year.
Just annually.
Maybe once.
Yeah.
So we'll come back with proposals on when for 10 and 11.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order, except the fact that we're adjourning an hour and a half early? Jeff, once again, best of luck to you. What are you going to do in return? Well, we're adjourned. So for those of you that have called in, we're adjourned. Thank you very much for your rapt attention today, and thank you to all committee members for coming today. Don't forget Tick Back a week from Thursday, and that's an in-person in Sacramento.
Yes.
So everybody in the room, Tick Back a week from Thursday. That's in person in Sacramento. And I'll try to get us done even earlier than that. Okay. So now that we're done, Jeff, what are you going to do?
I'm going to work around
the host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you and goodbye.